It's the best bike vacation ever.
3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities.
It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th.
This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreathe.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
On ships and choppers beginning Tuesday.
That's going to consist, at least in the initial shipments, of blankets and medical kits. These aren't first aid kits, but these are large packages which contain all of the medical equipment that you need to care for literally thousands of people for some period of weeks.
While the aid is welcomed in Beirut, Rice disappointed her Lebanese host by saying in that face-to-face visit the U.S. would not press Israel for a quick ceasefire without addressing the longer-term threat from Hezbollah. Triple-digit heat, a stage 2 power emergency. The state of California this afternoon. Josh Rubenstein's a KCBS-TV reporter in San Francisco.
The summer heat wave started nearly a month ago. And even though the valley is known for its hot weather, these temperatures are a little over the top. Ruben Gallegos has lived in the valley for 12 years.
Oh, yeah, it's always been hot, but yeah, lately it's been a little bit more, yeah.
Hardware and supply stores in valley areas are having a tough time keeping air conditioners and fans on the shelf. At the Home Depot in Woodland Hills, it's a daily battle keeping the store stocked.
As quick as they come in. I've gone through an incredible number of fans in the last 5 days alone.
Meanwhile, utilities in the St. Louis area and New York City also labored to restore power to hundreds of thousands whose electricity was knocked out by storms and equipment failures. The crew of an Asian ship that was listing nearly on its side in the Northern Pacific is prepared to abandon ship this afternoon after Coast Guard officials determined it was just too dangerous to stay on board. Chief Petty Officer Sarah Francis.
22 people on board. One crew member has been reported to have a broken leg, but there are no other injuries at this time. They're all wearing survival suits in the event that they need to abandon ship.
A Coast Guard cutter was on its way to the area. The Cougar Ace had been carrying nearly 5,000 cars from Japan to Canada when it began taking on water last night. Fears of an economic downturn were tempered today by upbeat earnings reports from a couple of drug makers and the announcement of a multi-billion dollar buyout of medical services giant HCA. That's all the investors needed by the closing bell. The Dow is up 182, the Nasdaq up 41. This is CBS News.
The following is an OnStar conversation.
OnStar Emergency, this is Beverly.
Yes, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I locked my keys out of my car. My car's running.
Oh, dear. Okay, let's get the doors open. What's the four-digit PIN number on the account?
902.
OnStar can send a signal to unlock your doors in most cases.
You are the best. This is the first time I'm trying this. I gotta see how this works.
You said the vehicle's running right now, right?
It's running, and I put my key in, and it closed the door.
Okay, let me go ahead and send the signal through.
No problem.
The peace of mind OnStar offers is more affordable than you might think.
There we go, baby. You're the best. I love you.
Thank you. You have a wonderful day.
Do I get charged for that?
No, not at all. It's part of your service.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
The first year of OnStar service is included on new OnStar-equipped GM vehicles, and unlimited use of all safety and security services costs only $16.95 plus tax per month after that. OnStar by GM. To experience OnStar, press your blue button or visit OnStar.com.
Okay, so it wasn't the top of the Empire State Building or the middle of the Golden Gate Bridge. CBS News correspondent Peter King says for one lucky couple, might as well have been.
It's not exactly what you expect at a Walmart. Wedding music, the bride and groom dressed to the nines. Rob and Abby Dominguez were planning a simple city hall ceremony, spending less money here so they could celebrate with her father in the Dominican Republic.
It's killing him that she's getting married and he can't be here.
So when their boss heard about it, she offered them the store's garden center. Abby's reaction?
No.
She relented when she realized all their friends could come. The aisles were lined with plants. There was a trellis. The wild it was business as usual in the rest of the store, the garden center was more like a garden sanctuary, at least for a few minutes. Peter King, CBS News, Orange City, Florida.
And again, a spirited day in the markets. The Dow up 182, the NASDAQ up 41. I'm Lou Milliano, CBS News.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cache Fever Jackpots. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cache Fever jackpot hits, a Cache Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cache Fever jackpot total and your Cache Club points online now at CacheCreek.com. So join Cache Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
If you send messages.
Of course, we're after Saddam Hussein. I mean, Bin Laden. He's. Let me say, I certainly hope so. Before I.
If you send messages.
That's a loaded question. First of all, I admire Senator Kerry's service to our country.
If you send messages.
I admire the fact that he is a great dad. We're facing
If you send messages.
Let me finish. And so the answer to your question is, no doubt about it, it's tough. It's hard work.
I'm George W. Bush, leader of the free world. I want to bomb Iraq. And when the world says no, I say, yeah, whatever. Saddam has started to meet our demands. Yeah, whatever. I talked to Colin Powell. He said,
sir, maybe we should give the inspectors more time.
I said, no, you know why? This is my United States of whatever. Yeah. And this is my United States of whatever.
President Bush.
Hush up, don't talk to me now. Whatever. Leave it to me. Hello.
This is Putin. Russia will veto war.
I see. Whatever.
Mr. President, North Korea's got nukes.
Oh. Ding dong dong ding ding dong dong. Translation? Whatever.
I am Bin Laden. You still have not caught me.
I'm George W. You know what the W stands for? Yet.
Whatever.
Hope you got the message. Good.
The United States and China are two nations divided by a vast ocean.
There he is.
Whatever.
Whatever. Whatever.
Major combat operations in Iraq have ended.
Oceans no longer protect us.
Whatever.
Whatever.
Whatever. That's our foreign policy. Whatever. This is incredible to me. All right, I'm just going to take calls because I want to know if people are actually starting to get the willies now. I'm not really, really sure what the end game could possibly be. But I will tell you that the only thing that this Iraq war gave us was another war, and Iraq is unraveling. One Iraqi government official said Iraq as a political project is finished, but as a vanity project for Bush and Cheney, it's got a ways to go. I mean, there's talk of dividing the country up. I don't know if that means we have to build billion-dollar super embassies in every section. But Iraqi leaders are literally considering dividing Baghdad into Shia and Sunni sections. I mean, you know, you just think about it. Somehow, some way, Republicans were going to figure out another way to have segregation. And that always plays out really well, doesn't it? Yeah. You know, we're going to be paying for this for probably the whole 21st century. Probably. the whole 21st century. And if they get their way and they get to drop nuclear bombs on Iran, which is pretty much where they're going with this, I'll tell you, you're gonna see like oil people, you know, people who work on rigs and people who work in the oil fields in hazmat suits because they will have poisoned an entire nation. And you're assuming that there'd be no retaliation. And, of course, Russia has said that if we attack Iran, Russia will attack us. What good can come of this? Putin said that he had sent a letter to Ariel Sharon a day after Mr. Hariri in Lebanon was assassinated, saying that Russia would fulfill its pledge to sell Syria vehicle-mounted anti-aircraft missiles. The next day, February 16, 2003, Colonel General Leonid Ivashov, the former senior member of the... I'm reading this. This is from the intelligence community. They put out position papers. And they said the next day, Colonel General from Russia's defense ministry, the senior member, and the current president of the Academy of Geopolitical Problems warned, quote, should an aggression be launched against Iran, the war will come to Russia's borders. And so the head of the Iranian Supreme National Security Council and a negotiator on nuclear issues went to Moscow to talk to the defense minister, Sergei Ivanov. And on February 26th of 2003, the head of the Russian Federation Atomic Energy Agency was expected to go to Iran and sign final agreements on a nuclear reactor. So Russia has de facto established guarantees for Iran's security because they don't want it bleeding from Iran's border into their border. And so they've said that they will beef up the southern border of Iran to protect it from the Black Sea into Central Asia because Moscow takes the threats against Iran and Syria very seriously. So this is like the beginning of the discussion about the Third World War now. And you just wonder, like, who's on whose side? Well, so far, what I can figure out is Benjamin Netanyahu, number one, thought this up. This is his war. He invented it in 1996. And, of course, the Israeli people have voted again since he was prime minister of Israel. And they voted him out. They got rid of him. But his policy is still in effect. And his policy is one that said, go to Iraq first. Destabilize the entire Middle East. Then after, you go to Iraq and destabilize it. And why in the world anybody would want to take the... this is just creepy, but when you talk about checks and balances in the geopolitical terrain, you know, Iran was moving toward the West. I mean, the Iranians themselves hate the mullahs. Very, very few people talk about that. But the young Iranians, who are 60% of the country, are so sick of war and so sick of mullahs telling them who they can marry and when they have to pray and what they have to wear on their heads. They want to be free. They want to be more like Europe than you could possibly imagine. And the mullahs have about a 3% approval rating. And if you would just be patient, Iran would probably start to become much, much more moderate. But, of course, what happens is you mass American troops on Iraq-Iran border, you mass American troops on Afghanistan's Iran border, and people say, oh, crap, George Bush is crazy. We need a crazy strong man, too. And the next thing you know, you got Mr. Ahmad in the head in charge of Iran, which is the exact opposite direction of where Iran should have been by now. And, of course, you know, Netanyahu comes and he says, okay, destabilize Iraq. And you say, well, why in the world would we want to destabilize Iraq when it is the natural check on Iranian Islamofascism? You know, it's the natural check. It was a secular dictatorship, and Iran is run by mullahs. Why would you want to take the check and the balance out of the Middle East for those two countries who have been fighting each other over Sunni-Shia issues for about 1,000 years? You know, it doesn't make any sense unless what you're looking to do is create instability all around the Middle East. And then through a war of literally attrition, bombing people out of existence, somehow there's a winner, and that winner somehow is Israel and America. So to me, it looks like the new world war is going to be the United States, Israel, and Turkey versus Russia, Syria, Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, and I don't know where Pakistan, India, China, and North Korea end up in this world war. But I don't get it. I don't understand how having a plan on paper, and actually moving down the checklist of the Netanyahu plan, which he put forward in 1996 to abandon the peace process and to move toward a war process that literally either starves people out of existence or bombs people out of existence and kills about a billion Muslims in the world. How does that make Israel safer? How does that make America safer? Do you think that killing and bombing and starving people are more likely to be friendly to us or more likely to say, see, I told you so, the only way to go is terrorism? Got to go low-tech because they're coming at you with tanks and bombs. We got to go box cutters and BBs and shrapnel. I don't get it. And then to invoke a religion or two religions that are superior to another religion or another, that to me is just unbelievable. And then the president stands there and says, killing a stem cell, that's murder. Killing an innocent Iraqi, that's progress. Snowflake babies, which obviously you had to do experimentation on fertilized eggs in order to get the success, called a snowflake baby, which is success. If you are hoping to have a family, a snowflake baby, meaning a baby that was conceived in a petri dish by two donors who were trying themselves to get pregnant, that you can buy for $5,000 instead of spending the $12,000 to go through the whole in vitro thing, it's a good thing if you want a family. You have a family girl. I come from a really strong family, and I just can't imagine that that would be a bad thing. Except that you did have to do experimentation on blastocysts, you know, fertilized eggs in petri dishes. So some blastocysts had to buy the farm in order for those snowflake babies to be possible. And yet the president says that the snowflake babies are a good result, but curing disease is a bad result. You know, using blastocysts to make a snowflake baby, even though it might have caused the loss of some blastocysts while you were learning how to make a snowflake baby, is a good result and a good use of blastocysts. But when you want to go and cure disease, that would be murder, unless you're a private company, and then you're free to do it. Nothing these people make sense. Nothing they do, nothing they say, nothing they advocate for makes any sense. Because it's all about enriching the chosen handful of businesses, the defense contractors, the oil-rich sheikdoms, the nuclear powers of the world, except not North Korea, no, not them, not Iran, not them. You know, it's like hand-picked blastocysts. Like this one is, if you touch this one, you're committing murder. If you touch that one and creating a snowflake baby, that's a beautiful thing. It doesn't make any sense because it's not consistent. It's not morally sound. It's got different rules for different petri dishes. It's got different rules for different places on the planet. The goal is not to create families, healthy families, no matter who wants to create a healthy family. It's hand selection. It's hand picked. And the rest are cannon fodder. Once you're 18, you're no longer a kid. You're no longer you're a grown-up embryo. But you're now cannon fodder. They are so bizarre, but they're great salesmen. 17 after.
The Randy Rhoads Show. George Bush, your money's no good here.
Money. Get away.
This is Air America Radio.
You're listening to AM 13.
I'll always consider myself the father of four boys, even though two of my sons are gone. Our twins, Kevin and Brian, died when their boat capsized. Bad weather, cold water, and the absence of life jackets contributed to their deaths. If I can help one person avoid the daily heartbreak that my wife and family must endure, then asking you to be responsible on your boat will be well worth my time. Visit BoatSmarter.com, and remember, if it's your boat, it's your responsibility.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Tubes. Why? Enormous tubes. Massive tubes. It really is the Internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the Internet commercially. The world has turned against this. If your own personal Internet, that is you and me. You and me is in a problem. Tubes. The Internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the Truth. AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
So hot today in New York City, that naked guy on the subway was screaming, "Who's crazy now?" Hot. Yeah. Hot down in Washington, D.C., Dick Cheney replaced his pacemaker with an ice maker. It's so hot, Christie Brinkley is now dating Ben and Jerry.
Whoa!
It's so hot today, ladies and gentlemen, George W. Bush told Al Roker to stop doing that. That's what he said. That's what President Bush said at the G8 summit. He was overheard using a dirty language at the G8 summit. And not only that, later he was ejected for headbutting.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
After Ron in Vancouver, Canada.
Hi, Randy. Hey, first time. Be gentle.
All right.
Hey, listen. On the radio this morning, I heard someone talking about Stephen Hawking.
Who yeah.
Came out quite strongly, and I really, really liked his analogy or the comparison he used, because I've heard the in vitro one versus the stem cell research. But he said the equivalency to him was that. It was very much like organ donors who are, you know, dead or dying by accident or whatever, and their organs are removed, and obviously somebody benefits from that. Either they can see or they can have a new heart or whatever. And I've got my organ donor card filled out, and I don't feel immoral or anything like that.
I'm an organ donor, too, and I don't think it's immoral.
And he was...
And if I die, every little last part of me, if it could save somebody else, it goes. That's the way it is.
Exactly, and he was saying that the stem cells are basically the same thing. If you're saying that those are life, and you're just going to toss them in the garbage, then and discard them, then why not use them in the same way that you use an organ donor thing? And I sure don't hear any of the right wing coming out and saying anything against that. But who knows? Maybe that's next. It wouldn't surprise me.
Well, you know, if they really are a culture of life, couldn't we ask for just a little consistency, meaning that when you're a grown-up embryo and you're 18 years old, you shouldn't be used as cannon fodder?
Well, I guess it depends on the brand of consistency that you're looking for, because stupidity doesn't seem to be a problem. If I could make one more comment about the Iraq thing, here's how I just sort of like pieced this together yesterday. But when I realized this whole experiment in democracy and the war and everything, and how Iraq looks now versus how it looked in the time of when Saddam was there. Saddam was a bad guy, there's no doubt about it, but you know what? I honestly think that secular cultural situation that they had there was probably as close as you're ever going to see an Arab nation get to any sort of a democracy by, not by definition of like voting in that, but just by people having security and being relatively happy, even if they didn't
like... Well, no. See, Iraq is a difficult situation because Iraq is made up of three very distinct groups that was artificially drawn and artificially assigned one country name by the British after they colonized that place. You know, the reason why it's not Mesopotamia anymore is because it was literally named by the British, who are a very colonizing little bunch. And everywhere they've ever gone to colonize people, they've ended up 100 years behind the rest of the world.
Canada included.
and Africa, too. I mean, you've got to look at, you know, what the French and the British do with their empire building. They literally set back the parts of the world hundreds of years by colonizing and choosing who could reproduce and who couldn't and who would get the fresh water and who didn't. I mean, it's just insane. You can't do that and expect a good result ever. So I really wish people would look in their own backyards and see what's good there and spread it around. And stop looking in other people's backyards to figure out they don't mow their crabgrass.
You got it.
It's just so bizarre. I mean, it's like, okay, you can make a baby by using in vitro clinics if you have enough money. Sure, some embryos might be created and die. That's perfectly okay with Bush. But if you want to use embryos left over from that process to save lives that are already alive... That's murder. I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense. And, of course, we want to kill a billion Muslims now because that somehow, in somebody's twisted logic, is going to bring peace to us in America and bring peace to Israel. How does killing a billion people bring peace to anybody? You know, I mean, you behave as if, that, you know, it could work. There are people that are going to tell you it could work. It can't work. There's never been a successful empire. There has never been a place that colonized another place where the colonized place did well. Debbie in New Jersey.
Hey, Randy. How are you?
I'm all right.
I just want to add to the twisted logic mix. These snowflake babies that we were, you know, seeing on TV, what happens when they get sick? What happens when, God forbid, one of them is in a diving accident and has a spinal cord injury? What happens when one of them...
Well, then all of a sudden the parents' minds will change.
What happens?
Why? Because selfishly they will say, oh, well, it didn't affect me before, but now it does.
Yeah.
It's always going to be a little too late, huh?
What if these snowflake babies get this neuroblastoma, a horrible form of pediatric cancer that kills kids almost all the time?
I know, I'm saying. What happens is then all of a sudden it's real for you, and you change your mind. Like Nancy Reagan.
The Randy Rhoads Show. Radio. Only smarter. This is Air America Radio.
It's the Randy Rhoads Show.
It's the best bike vacation ever.
3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities. It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreathe.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
Hey, you streaming listeners, open your media player and click on the link to nohagglemortgage.com right now, and you can save thousands on your mortgage loan. Simple, easy, and takes less than 30 seconds. For the first time, homeowners can now have direct access to the same rates that mortgage brokers get. That's right, the same rates that mortgage brokers get. Three things allow nohagglemortgage.com to get the lowest mortgage rates in the industry. One, no commissions to pay loan officers. Two, most of the work is done over the internet, saving you a lot of money. 3. No haggling. Click on the link now, then click on Quick Quote to find out what rate you can get. Get your money faster and save thousands. No gimmicks, no middleman, no haggling. Just simple, fast, friendly, low-rate mortgage loans. Skip the loan officer. Go direct to nohagglemortgage.com. You're already online. Take 30 seconds and find out for yourself. Or go to nohagglemortgage.com. Check it out today. Licensed by the DOC.
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sim.
To understand it,
Miss Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. Campaign is dead.
See how easy it was?
It was that easy.
See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You think you get all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
If Romney gets the nomination, the tunnels win. Think about it. Taurus, Terra, Earth. Tunnels.
Do the math, Scott!
It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's left channel.
Dan in Westchester.
Hi, Randy. How are you?
Hi, Dan.
You asked earlier if we were getting the willies. I'm definitely getting the willies.
Yeah, I'm getting the willies, too. Right. I really am. And this whole thing, I mean, I've never seen a war, that had so much religion in it that ever came to any good, you know?
I happen to think things are going to go from bad to worse here. And, I personally feel that this is it's all a grab for the oil that's left. These guys that are in the business, they know that we're coming to an end of it for too long, and they got to get while the getting's good.
Well, that's pretty pathetic, I got to tell you. If this is all over, you know, some dinosaur remains, when obviously it's the 21st century, you know, one of the best things that I can say is, you know, they want to kill and they want to conquer and they want to, you know, take the last drop of crude out of the ground. Fine, let them all stand there and hold all of it and let us do something to piss them all off, make it absolutely the last commodity anybody wants because no one needs it anymore.
Yeah, I'm an auto mechanic and I work in a fancy repair shop here in Westchester, and we have a customer who right now is the director of Saudi Aramco, and I'll let you make what you will out of the story, but I asked him a few weeks ago when he came to pick up his Mercedes, I asked him, when are we going to run out? And he said, well, we're going to be using petroleum products for the next couple hundred years. And I asked him, well, what do you think about the people that talk about peak oil? And he said, well, I got to go. And he got in his car and left.
Well, I guess he didn't want to get into a conversation with a lowly American about the Saudi riches. But the truth is that they've not helped their people, which is why Saudi Arabia is so radicalized, the population is, and why Saudi Arabia is so afraid of its own population. It's incredible. I mean, even when there were, like, reserves, nobody knows what's proven in the ground. But even when there were reserves and you know, we said to them, yeah, you keep the reserves and we'll help you get it out of the ground and we'll make you rich and built that whole freaking thing out of a sand trap into what it is today. Still, the Saudi elites didn't take care of their own people. And that's why you had radicalized Islam. The whole idea that the Saudis export terrorism is to keep it away from their royal palaces. They don't treat their people right. 30% of the population's unemployed there. There's like the ultra elite and everybody else. You know, it's disgusting what that kind of wealth seems to do to people.
And you know, the reality is that nobody.
You know, if America was serious about democracy and all this crap, it would have started with its good friends, the House of Saud. And it would have said to them, you know, this guy, Osama bin Laden, he's one of yours. He was an elite guy. He was part of the bin Laden construction family. Obviously, he got really sick and tired of watching the Saudi people starve to death because you've got all this wealth. His family had all this wealth. And so he used his wealth to tell people, look, the only way that you can stop this is to stop them. And they are completely held in power by the Americans, so that's where you should target. I mean, that's what happened to us. But no, only the elite survived this this global game.
All right, Randy. Good talking to you.
You too. I'm serious. You know, you think about this sheikdom called Saudi Arabia. You know, it's unbelievable the unemployment that goes on there. It's unbelievable. And when there's despair and poverty and you know that there's money in the government and you know that your leaders are corrupt, that's what makes people, that's exactly what drives people into fanaticism. And once it's a religious society, you get religious fanaticism so that people are afraid to talk to you. They're afraid to tell you what's what. They're afraid to tell you God does not want you to die. God does not want you to martyr your son or yourself. There's no, dying is the exact opposite of what God wants. God created people to live life, to teach the lessons of life to each other. Now, this is about the elite protecting each other. And ultra-right-wing people tend to be ultra-right-wing for two reasons. One, they know that they can keep all the money for themselves and sell some sort of a sick religious view of the world to their followers, which will keep them very happy to be poor because they will say it's harder to get a camel through the eye of a needle than it is to get a rich man into heaven. And the people that are telling you that are the richest people in the freaking world. You want a comparison of unemployment just so you can get a feeling for what it's like to be in a radicalized dictatorship like Saudi Arabia? When I tell you there's 30% unemployment in Saudi Arabia, I want you to understand that unemployment in the United States maxed out during the Great Depression at 24.9, but I'll say 25%. So the Great Depression in America was 25% unemployment, 1 in 4. 1 in 3 in Saudi Arabia is unemployed. 30% unemployment in the richest place on the planet. You think that doesn't radicalize the population? You think that the Saudi royals aren't afraid of their own people? and they find religion to be a good thing. They think it controls the murderous instincts, you know? But really, look what it's become. It's the rallying cry of every single person in the world who feels like fascism is taking hold and it's got to stop and militarism is on the rise. It's not democracy that they hate. It's dictatorships. It's the concentration of wealth and military power in so few corrupt hands. It's pissing off the whole mythical little guy world. Joe in Nutley, New Jersey.
Original home of Martha Stewart.
Oh, really? Is she from?
Yeah.
See, Nutley's a pretty town.
Oh, yes, thank you. It is.
Yeah, it is.
I was talking to your screener. There's a guy, James Lilix. Have you ever heard of him as a syndicated writer?
No.
He's a real right-winger. And he basically said the same thing you're saying. In other words, I don't know if he's in on it, but he seemed like one of those PNEC-type guys talking about we should go through the whole Mideast like a shop vac because they can't stand each other anyway, and we'd be doing them a favor by eliminating. I've been trying to find it online, but I've been unable to. It's back from like it's either 2003 or 2004. And, I mean, it's a scary column. This guy's like, we should just wipe them out because we're doing them a favor.
They're wackos, man. They have absolutely no care for human beings, for human life. Human life to them has a distinct bank account number. It has a distinct color, and it's green or gold or black gold. You know, they're very specific about who gets the love and who doesn't.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and it's really kind of fascinating to me that if you had 100% employment in the world, if we had gone into Iraq, which, believe me, I didn't want to do, but if we had gone in there and we had shown the Arab world how a democracy really acts towards its people, and that the theory in democracy is that what you want to create is security and liberty. And so we went there and we secured everybody and we gave them liberty by putting them to work rebuilding their country, and everybody was very busy, you know, laboring and rebuilding and creating and doing liberal things, you know.
Yeah.
And that there was freedom of religion, freedom from religion, that everybody had a place at the table. You could argue, you could scream, you could yell. But as soon as, you know, you had to suffer the man who said things that made your blood boil, and you couldn't hurt him, but you could take your pen and put it to paper, and you could write, and you could show why he's wrong, or you could yell and scream, but you couldn't hurt him. You couldn't physically hurt him. Meanwhile, everybody would go back to their job after their argument over the lunch table or over the dinner table. Everybody would go home to their secure family, and then the next day they'd get their 8 hours sleep, and the next day they'd go back to their jobs, and everybody ate at the table again, and everybody would argue some more. That's democracy. But we didn't do that. We gave the jobs to the contractors here in America. The best connected people to the administration got the jobs. They got the guns. They got to police Iraq. We saw the videos of the people having fun, killing Iraqis. They set it to music because it was really fun for them to kill.
Yeah.
What did you think was going to happen?
Well, it's an expression in construction, and I'm sure it's in other trades. Chaos creates cash. And
yeah.
I agree with you that it is planned chaos.
I always said that. I
Absolutely.
Said this is planned chaos, and I really didn't understand what the end game was. And I still can't tell you what the end game is, but I do know that the end game has a whole lot to do with the concentrated wealth in the hands of a very few selected leaders of certain countries. And some of them will be Arab countries, believe me.
Well, I think that I can't find it, but if you can locate this guy's article, it sums it up exactly what they're thinking. Exactly.
Well, I appreciate it. I mean, it's all there. You know, I said to you at the beginning of the show that there are people who follow Leo Strauss. If you don't know what a Straussian is, do yourself a favor and do a little Google search for Leo Strauss and start reading. This is at whose knee they learned this stuff. This is the craziest, sickest, most distorted view on a culture of life or a culture of progress or a culture of, you know, meritocracy where you get what you give, you're rewarded, you know, because you work hard, there's a reward at the end of the day. There's sort of an American dream, says, you know, you educate yourself and then you apply that education and you work really hard, you play by the rules, you get ahead. Oh, this sets it all on its ass. I mean, this really just blows it out of the water and says that's not how you get rich. It's really a sick thing. And they're all worshippers of this guy. He was a professor at the University of Chicago. And Wolfowitz and Pearl and all of them, they're devotees, man. William Crystal, But what's really fascinating is those who aren't Straussian but were neoconservative, like Fukuyama, who came up with the whole idea of neoconservatism, they've all walked. William F. Buckley, father of the neoconservative movement. John Dean, a devotee of the I always forget the Arizona Barry Goldwater crowd, right? Fukuyama, the guy that that created the word neoconservative. William F. Buckley, the current orator of choice for the conservative movement. Pat Buchanan. They have all said these people are nuts. This has nothing to do with conservative. This is something else. Fukuyama's out. Pat Buchanan's out. He's been out since Iraq. William F. Buckley just yesterday said, it's over for me. They're not conservatives. They're something else. I don't know what it is. But whatever it is, it's dangerous and it's evil. A lot of conservatives have said, you know, just forget this group. There's something really, really wrong with them. Nothing they do works out. Everything they do is expensive. They spend like crazy. They spend the treasury, and they spend life like they're not conservatives, you know. It's all fantasy on their part. I swear to God, they thought that they could wish away that killing was bad. They just, we'll forget that we're killing people. We won't show the killing. We'll just keep saying there's progress in Iraq. There's progress in Iraq. There is no progress in Iraq. The whole thing is a failed, horrible graveyard full of American and Arab blood all mixed together in this giant graveyard. 46 after.
The Randy Rhoads Show.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Our thoughts exactly. This is Air America Radio.
A liberal dose of the truth.
I was in the water before I knew what happened. I reached up to stop an or two from going overboard. The next thing I knew, I was overboard too. Watching my boat, there was nothing I could do to avoid being hit. The first time the propeller cut through my back. The second time, it cut my hand and arm. A moment of operator inattention, a lifetime of can't forget. Because I survived, I can tell you how important it is to be responsible on your boat. Visit BoatSmarter.com and remember, if it's your boat, it's your responsibility.
The fact that somebody like Rush Limbaugh, who has made a career preaching that anybody who does drugs has got to go right to jail, do not pass go, no questions asked, right to jail, gets caught doing 30 OxyContin a day. 30 OxyContin? Do you have any idea how high that is? I don't, and I've been pretty high. But, wow, this guy is putting up Elvis numbers, ladies and gentlemen. But how does he get away with it? They say, well, he's on medication. Oh, see, that's not drugs. You know what, pal? We all got our medication, don't we? They can have an ad on TV that said, ask your doctor if Jack Daniels is right for you. And it would not be out of place thematically.
The odds of you being killed by a terrorist are practically zero.
So I say relax and enjoy the show. You have to be a realist. You have to be realistic about terrorism. Certain groups of people, certain groups, Muslim fundamentalists, Christian fundamentalists, Jewish fundamentalists, and just plain guys from Montana, are going to continue to make life in this country very interesting for a long, long time. That's the reality. Angry men in combat fatigues talking to God on a two-way radio and muttering incoherent slogans about freedom are eventually going to provide us with a great deal of entertainment, especially after your stupid economy collapses all around you and the terrorists come out of the woodwork. You'll have anthrax in the water supply, sarin gas in your air conditioners. There'll be chemical and biological suitcase bombs in every city. And I say, enjoy it. Relax. Enjoy the show. Take a chance. Put a little fun in your life.
Bush faces a singular problem, best defined, I think, as the absence of effective conservative ideology, with the result that he ended up being very extravagant in domestic spending, extremely tolerant of excesses by Congress, and in respect of foreign policy, incapable of bringing together such forces as apparently were necessary to conclude the Iraq challenge.
I don't know why it takes Buckley so long to say what's so obvious. Bush is a failure. Cheney is a failure in this policy of preemptive war. It should have sounded like a failure going in. You know, anybody that said preemptive war could be a good idea, you're a moron. There's something wrong with you. If war isn't morally dictated by the presence of war upon you, then you are a murderer, plain and simple. It's the right of self-defense that exists in the world. It's certainly not the right to provoke. That's where we draw the line. You know, if somebody, just take it down to its smallest level. If somebody attacks me with a deadly weapon and I defend myself with a deadly weapon, I don't go to jail because somebody attacked me and I was defending my person. It's the same with war, except you're committing someone else's person to do the fighting for you, which makes it more of an obligation to make sure that what you're doing is defending, not provoking. But this Bush administration said, you know something? Screw it. Leo Strauss said to be an effective politician, you gotta, number one, not become more modern, not move forward. See, that's the thing that the real fascists have in common. They hate them. This is why it was so easy for them to come up with the big lie, which was, oh, well, the thing that the Muslim world hates is modern living. Leo Strauss hated modern living. He thought modern living was going to ruin society, which is where they got their whole social agenda from. And then he said, you actually have permission as a good conservative to lie to the people. It's necessary to keep them safe from modernity. That's who he is. And that's what they have in common with the Osama bin Ladens of the world. Very sick bunch. Bernadine in Cincinnati.
Hi, Randy.
Hey.
I just want to tell you, I am so grateful that you are bringing this out for those of us with blood on the ground and relatives all over the Middle East and Israel and Lebanon and Syria. For you to be talking about this nationally, I'm just so grateful.
Let me tell you something. You know, America, I don't think people understand why we support Israel. But the truth of the matter is that Israel needed support because Israel was constantly full of people who were fleeing preemptive attacks on them, okay? The whole idea of Israel came about because people would preemptively attack people just for being Jewish. And this is prior to World War One. This is like 1912, 1913.
Sure it was. There was a huge amount of anti-Semitism all over the world spread by the Christian church.
But let me just say this. Here's where America always got its moral grounding. This is where America was great because it was good. America totally supported Israel. But it was an honest broker. Now, people hear that and they don't know what that means. It means we really didn't take a side. We said whenever Israel is attacked, Israel has a right to defend itself. But Israel should not attack, because if it does, then it's preemptive. It's doing exactly what it was fleeing. So we, the number one recipient of foreign aid from us is Israel.
But
the
By far.
But the number two, do you know who the number two is?
No, I don't.
Egypt.
Oh, yeah.
To keep
yeah.
the peace. That's what an honest broker does.
Well, you know, this whole thing about there was never anything in the plan to keep the peace. This is all war all the time, and it's very racist. And they played on the racism of others towards Arabs and Muslims. You know, those dumb Arabs.
Oh, and now they're going to do it.
They love us.
And now they're going to do it. And now they're going to do it against Jews too. Now they're going to call anybody that speaks out about preemptive war on the part of Israel. I mean, preemptive war to me is just a nauseating concept. But there are people who, if Israel does it, then it's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're an anti-Semite if you say it's not okay. Well, I'll tell you something. I am the most dedicated patriot I know, because when my country does preemptive war, it's just a freaking bad thing. It's wrong and it's murder. And anybody that does preemptive war, it's bad and it's murder. So don't become what you hate is the message. And always remember that when you do preemptive war, you are making exactly what you're fighting for less safe, less secure. What good can come of this?
You know, the neocons don't give a hell about anybody in Israel. If they did, they wouldn't be bargaining with them to do all this. The people in Israel live horrible lives. They live in fear all the time.
No, that's not true. That's just not true. It's not true at all. And to tell you the truth, this is Israel's idea. This was a plan written by Benjamin Netanyahu. But it's not.
Are you talking about the plan to secure the peace? Because that was written by the American Enterprise Institute.
No, I'm talking about this plan.
Which one are you talking about? Which document?
The one that Benjamin Netanyahu wrote.
A clean break, a new strategy.
That's
for
right.
Securing the realm.
Yes.
Okay, I have that document, and I have that it was written by Richard Pearl.
No, it was written by Benjamin Netanyahu in 1996.
Study group leader.
And I'll tell you something. You know what? It's all right-wing drivel.
Yeah.
The people of Israel are good people. The people of Lebanon are good people. Everybody learned to be a good neighbor, and they won't have any of it. There's no money in it.
Listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to stackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's stackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, stackjobs.com is a click away. At stackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel, streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
The U.S. begins a diplomacy effort in the Mideast.
We're deeply concerned about the Lebanese people.
And the president turns his attention to another hot spot.
The war in Iraq has destabilized the Middle East.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Cammie McCormick. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice began her Mideast peace mission today with stops in Lebanon and Israel. CBS News correspondent Dan Raviv reports from Tel Aviv.
In the middle of a war, the U.S. clearly taking Israel's side, the Secretary of State tried to show the U.S. cares about the Lebanese people by flying in by helicopter, meeting top politicians. But in Israel tonight, she stuck to her refusal to work for an immediate ceasefire.
If we have learned anything, it is that any peace is going to have to be based on enduring principles.
Rice tomorrow will see the top Israeli leaders who like her stand on this crisis. Dan Raviv, CBS News, Tel Aviv.
I'm Peter Mayer at the White House. The administration is responding to the human suffering in Lebanon.
The order of the president, humanitarian supplies will start arriving in Lebanon tomorrow by helicopter and by ship.
Spokesman Tony Snow says the U.S. wants humanitarian corridors for the supplies, a safe way to keep the effort out of the crossfire between Hezbollah and Israel.
Now this.
The following is an OnStar conversation.
OnStar emergency, this is Quincy. Is there an emergency in the vehicle?
Yes, there is. Two car accidents. Bags deployed. I can't hurt. Everybody's hurt.
Okay, let me go ahead and contact the police.
If your airbags deploy, OnStar receives a signal and can call to check on you.
Please.
Hi, this is Quincy with OnStar. I'm calling to report a vehicle with airbag deployment. There are injuries.
Who's injured?
Myself and the guy in the other car. My arms are hurting real bad, and the other guy's still in the car, and he's screaming to get out. There's a head-on collision.
Okay, we've got help on the way.
The peace of mind OnStar offers is more affordable than you might think.
Did you need me to stay on the line with you until the police arrive?
I think we'll be all right.
I hope everything turns out okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir.
The first year of OnStar service is included on new OnStar-equipped GM vehicles, and unlimited use of all safety and security services costs only $16.95 plus tax per month after that. OnStar by GM. To experience OnStar, press your blue button or visit OnStar.com.
In Iraq, U.S. soldiers have been stepping up patrols. Security in the Iraqi capital is crucial, according to military analysts, and may be at the top of the president's agenda tomorrow.
On the eve of a visit by the new Iraqi prime minister, which will include a speech to a joint meeting of Congress, Senate Democratic leader Harry Reid says Iraq has fallen into civil war and Congress needs to act to get the U.S. out of it.
Republicans have blindly rubber-stamped the president's mismanagement of this war and fell in line with his failed policy.
Reid is calling for another debate and action on Iraq before Congress leaves for its August break, arguing the situation there has destabilized the Middle East and is making Iran far more of a danger. Bob Fuzz, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Utilities are straining as a heat wave scorches California. In its eighth day, state power officials declared a stage two emergency. KCBS-TV reporter Josh Rubenstein is in the San Fernando Valley.
The summer heat wave started nearly a month ago, and even though the valley is known for its hot weather, these temperatures are a little over the top. Ruben Gallegos has lived in the valley for 12 years.
Oh, yeah, it's always been hot, but yeah, lately it's been a little bit more, yes.
Hardware and supply stores in valley areas are having a tough time keeping air conditioners and fans on the shelf. At the Home Depot in Woodland Hills, it's a daily battle keeping the store stocked.
As quick as they come in. I've gone through an incredible number of fans in the last 5 days alone.
In St. Louis, the power is still out to more than 200,000 people because of last week's hot weather. In Houston, a jury's finished deliberating for the day in the retrial of Andrea Yates, accused of drowning her young children in a bathtub.
The jury here heard two very different views of Andrea Yates. Defense attorney Wendell Odom told jurors that Yates was insane, delusional, and should be found not guilty by reason of insanity.
She's just a depraved person. She just wants to kill her children.
Prosecutors agreed that Yates had emotional problems, but said lead prosecutor Joe Ombe,
she is sane at the time she killed these children. Because she knew it was wrong.
It's come down to one issue, Andrea Yates' mental state at the time of the killings. Steve Futterman, CBS News at the County Courthouse in Houston.
Gas prices are the second highest we've ever paid.
The national average for a gallon of regular unleaded ticked up to $3.02 a gallon. That tops the high we saw last year after Hurricane Katrina. And according to a new Gallup poll, more and more Americans, in fact more than half, say that the high prices at the pump are cutting into the way they are spending money. Many Americans now saying they're pulling back on vacations and eating out in order to fill up.
Reporter Alexis Christophorus, you're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Looking to get your plan. You know something? There's nothing wrong with a culture where everyone has a different idea of what's humorous. The last time I can remember an entire nation being on the same page, it was Germany in the late 30s, and it didn't really turn out that funny. Remember, in its time and place, what Hitler said was considered politically correct. And it's that blind adherence to what is situationally palatable that is truly dangerous. We should question it all, poke fun at it all, push on it all, rail against it all, and most importantly, for Christ's sake, laugh at it all. Because the only thing separating Holy Writ from complete visual is your perspective. It's your only weapon. Keep the safety off. Don't take yourself too seriously. Remember that at the end of the day, this is just an ant farm with beepers, and it takes zero politically correct society to screw in a light bulb because they are perpetually in the dark. Of course, that's just my opinion. I could be wrong.
People that have to be really, really happy about all this news about a war is the Catholic Church. Oh, yeah, they got to be happy because they're off the front page of the paper for the first time in a long time. Woo! Woo! And I am a recovering Catholic. Some of you are here tonight, yes? So I've been following this story. I went to 16 years of Catholic education. I'm lucky I'm alive. I went to Our Lady of Psychological Warfare. I've always felt that if women have to be in the military, they should only be lesbians. Because we would never get around to having a war. Right? Because we'd have to have some meetings. A war in October? What about the softball banquet?
Patriot.
Majority Report with Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar. We're more than just empty slogans, because this is where truth stops to have a chat. The left just got a little bit louder on The Majority Report.
Welcome to the Majority Report. How are you, John Elliott? John Elliott sitting in for the station, Sam Cedar. How are you? It is very good to be back in your ear. Air-conditioned radio keeps you cool. Gets your blood pulse up, but keeps you cool. Because you know the truth is going to be coming into your ears. Yeah, it's good to be back. For those of you that didn't know, I was here about 3 weeks ago, the last week in June and the first week in July, and I just loved it. I just loved the opportunity of being here with you on Air America and sitting in on the Majority Report for Sam and Janine while they were vacationing. We do a show here in San Diego on KLSD, the Air America affiliate, on weekends, noon to 2 Pacific time, and we generally bring in guests that we think are quite significant. Guests that you may not hear on other shows, and guests that you may hear on other shows that we take a different point of view. Today is no exception. Jess Durfee is the chair of the San Diego Democratic Party. Now, I know a little bit about this because I'm here in San Diego, but you'll recall back the early part of June there was the district race to replace Duke Cunningham, and Francine Busby faced off against Brian Bilbray, the Republican, and Bilbray won. But as it turns out, the Diebold machines that were used, actually, some of them had a sleepover. Many of them were taken home by poll workers. I'm not kidding. They actually took unregistered machines home, and I'm not saying they did anything with them, but I'm not saying they didn't. I'm saying we need to do something about this. Jess Durfee's been talking to the California Board of Supervisors here in San Diego, the County Board of Commissioners, and he's been trying to get in touch with the registrar, who is a raging right-wing Republican who has now decided he can do a recount, but it's a dollar a vote. 14 cents a vote in Orange County, but a dollar a vote here in San Diego. And we're going to be talking to Jess about something to do with, you know, this has to be nipped in the bud. We have to nail this right now, because if there's a discrepancy in one election when there was no other elections going on, can you imagine when they start to mess with the election in November? All these congressional seats, 435 seats, are up for grabs. You've got gubernatorial races up for grabs. You've got senatorial races. It's hey. And we will be too divided to say, well, wait a minute, there was something in Muncie, Indiana, and what about this? There's another one over here in Ohio, and what about this in Montana? Now's the time to really make a case out of this. So we're going to have Jess on the show. Also, he picked up Newsweek. Hit the newsstands today. Cover story, Weight of the World, an exclusive behind the scenes with President Bush as the Middle East explodes. It's an exclusive interview with President Bush. Newsweek, done by Richard Wolff. Richard is the White House correspondent for Newsweek magazine. I love Newsweek. I love their correspondence. They get to it. And Richard is going to be on with us for his first interview about his article and a personal interview with, exclusive interview with President Bush. And then later on in the program, we are going to have a linguist. This is a gentleman, Jeffrey Nunberg, and he is a linguist at the UC Berkeley School of Information. He's also done research for the Center of Language Studies and Information at Stanford, and he's a consulting professor at Stanford in the Department of Linguistics. And he has written a book that has just come out called Talking Right. Subtitle, How the Conservatives Turned Liberalism into a Tax-Raising, Latte-Drinking, Sushi-Eating, Volvo-Driving, New York Times-Reading, Body-Piercing, Hollywood-Loving, Left-Wing Freak Show. So he is going to be with us a little bit later in the program. Later on this week, I'll be here all week. I'll have Paul Krugman. Paul Krugman's not going anywhere. He's writing his books, and he's not making a lot of appearances. He hasn't been, you know, you haven't seen him on the Colbert Report. You haven't seen him on a lot of places. You haven't seen or heard him on radio. He's going to be on with us. Scott Ritter has a new book coming out on Iran, Target Iran, that is going to be hitting the shelves in October. We're going to get a preview of that with Scott Ritter later this week. Larry Beinhart is going to be with us. He's got a book out called The Fog of Facts, or The Facts of Fog. And it basically talks about trying to cut through the spin, and he's going to be with us. He also wrote a little book called Wag the Dog, which turned into a marvelous movie. The great Pat Morrison, Pulitzer Prize winner, and multiple Pulitzer Prize winner, multiple Golden Mike winner. She's won half a dozen Emmys, and she's an op-ed columnist for the Los Angeles Times. And your homework tonight is going to be to read her last column on Thursday. I'll tell you a little bit more about that as we get further on in the week. Just a lot of people are going to drop by. We're going to have a blast. Thank you for joining us. If you would like to speak with us, 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. Let's see. Let me start with some good news. I mean, there's a lot of bad news out there, as we know. We're going to be talking about that. But to some smiley news this past weekend, something that make you smile and chuckle a little. NASCAR held its race this weekend at the Pocono Racetrack in Pennsylvania. Now, who is the senatorial candidate for Pennsylvania on the dark side? Well, that would be Santorum, wouldn't it? So here we have, before the race, they have, if you've never been to a NASCAR race, before the race, all of the racing teams have trailers. And they set it up midway style, like at a carnival. And they have these gigantic trailers that sell merchandise, everything from hats and T-shirts and lunch buckets and key fobs and whatnot, and autographed pictures and life-size posters and on and on and on of your favorite NASCAR driver. And a lot of gear, a lot of NASCAR gear, a lot of memorabilia stuff there. And my producer Steve called from there. He was there working the Fox broadcast yesterday, and he told me that you're going to love this. And he said that before the race, the midway was absolutely packed with people visiting the Jeff Gordon booth and people visiting the Kyle Petty booth and on and on and on. There was a Rick Santorum booth. Now, bear in mind, this is NASCAR. All right? So who do NASCAR fans supposedly vote for? Correct. That's the right answer. They vote Republican. So here you have Republican NASCAR fans at a NASCAR race in Pennsylvania during a Senate race. And there is Rick Santorum's booth with a gigantic picture of Santorum on the side of the trailer. It's all man. There's people. There's literature. And not a single individual in front of the booth. It's over. Ricky, it's over. Okay, let's cashier that one. That one's done. We got that one. That one's in the bag. More good news. Ohio. In the race for governor, Democrat Ted Strickland has a 20-point lead over Kenneth Blackwell, the Catherine Harris of the North. And in the Ohio Senate race, Democratic Congressman Sherrod Brown has an 8-point lead on sitting Republican Senator Mike DeWine. Mike DeWine. So he's on his way. So we start off with a little bit of good news, huh? Oh, boy. Alberto Torture Boy Gonzalez, the man who doesn't know if his grandparents were illegal immigrants. Torture Boy told us that President Bush personally stopped the Department of Justice's investigation into the NSA's illegal wiretapping. Remember that? Well, in a related story comes the news that a federal judge has rejected the government's efforts to dismiss the lawsuit against AT&T, accusing the company of collaborating with the federal government in an illegal domestic spying program to monitor Americans' phone calls and emails. That's what I call it, and that's, of course, what the suit alleges. Now, what does the government, our government, your government, my government, what do they call it? No. It's not an illegal domestic spying program to monitor Americans' phone calls and emails. No. It's not that at all. It's a, get ready now. It's, are you ready? It's a terrorist surveillance program. Of course it is. Now, applying the same logic, to catch a bank robber, you monitor each and every customer's withdrawals at every single bank, everywhere, just so you can maybe catch that one-time withdrawal when the person slides a note to the teller that says, this is a holdup. Now, AT&T, who, by the way, got paid for doing this, it was a revenue source, a profit center for the telco. What AT&T did was set up a separate room full of equipment which allowed the government to spy on you and me. It's an illegal domestic spying program to monitor Americans' phone calls and emails. That's what it is. But no, to our government, it's not that at all. It's a terrorist surveillance program. Now, when do you think they did this? When do you think this deal, and not denying that the deal exists, you see, because that would be a little foolish because we've had a whistleblower. When do you think they struck this deal between the government and AT&T? I know. I heard you. You said after 9/11, like everything's changed after 9/11. No, that's not true. That's not true. This was part of the government's John Poindexter spy on all our citizens all the time program. They did this before 9/11. They actually did this before 9/11. You believe that? They actually entered into this deal. This is the John Poindexter Super Spy Database. You know, the Total Information Awareness Program, where they want your medical history, they want your financial history, they want to know who's calling you, who you're calling, who's emailing you, who you're emailing, what library books you read. Remember, Patriot Act? They want to know what you do at the library. They want to know what magazines you read, who you're seen with. You were in Starbucks last week. What were you doing in Starbucks? A double frappuccino mocha latte. Ooh, it's not what he usually drinks. Got to put that in the database. Got to keep tabs of everybody. It's John Elliott in for Sam on the Majority Report. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to take your calls, 866-303-2270. There's a lot going on in our world, ladies and gentlemen. We need to get to it, you and I. We're going to do that exact thing when I get back with you.
Arguing with your conservative friends? Call your local liberals at the Majority Report. 866-303-2270. Let us know how you really feel.
You'll love it.
Call 866-303-2270.
You're listening to AM 1320.
Hey, you streaming listeners, open your media player and click on the link to NoHaggleMortgage.com right now, and you can save thousands on your mortgage loan. It's simple, easy, and takes less than 30 seconds. For the first time, homeowners can now have direct access to the same rates that mortgage brokers get.
That's right, the same rates that mortgage brokers get.
Three things allow NoHaggleMortgage.com to get the lowest mortgage rates in the industry.
One,
no commissions to pay to loan officers.
Two,
most of the work is done over the internet, saving you a lot of money.
Three,
no haggling. Click on the link now, then click on Quick Quote to find out what rate you can get. Get your money faster and save thousands. No gimmicks, no middleman, no haggling. Just simple, fast, friendly, low-rate mortgage loans. Skip the loan officer. Go direct to NoHaggleMortgage.com. You're already online. Take 30 seconds and find out for yourself. Or go to NoHaggleMortgage.com. Check it out today. Licensed by the DOC.
Welcome to Los Angeles, where I believe the official sunscreen is now lead, isn't it, pretty much? Oh, my God, this heat. I was sweating like Naomi Campbell trying to hire a maid. It was so hot today. It was so hot in Hollywood today. Brad and Angelina adopted Ben and Jerry. Did you know that? It was so hot in Encino. Michael Jackson actually stopped at a young boy's lemonade stand and just bought the lemonade. You know the worst part about this heat wave across the country is Al Gore walking around going, I told you so. Actually, if Al Gore's movie on global warming is correct, as you know, the ice caps are shrinking. You all know about that. The glaciers are shrinking. The only thing not shrinking, Al Gore, apparently. Have you seen Al? Really not shrinking. I tell you, the heat, it puts people in a bad mood. You know, in fact, coming into work today, people were swearing like President Bush near an open mic. It was unbelievable.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
Now, back to the most dangerous liberal in America, John Elliott.
The Majority Report. Your America Radio Network, John Elliott sitting in. How are you? Happy Monday. Hell of a way to spend one-seventh of one's life, I grant you, but I will do my best to make it bright for you. If you'd like to speak with us, 866-303-2270. Michael in the Bronx, how are you? Welcome to the Majority Report. You're on with John Elliott. How are you doing this evening?
Hi, John. How are you doing?
And I'm fine, Michael. How are you?
Okay, hanging in there. Before I get to where I'm calling, let me assure you, don't worry about a thing because you always do a damn good job when you're filling in. So
thank you. That's very kind.
Yeah, please.
Your check will be in the mail. Thank you.
Forget that. One thing that really angers me and offends me as a black man is the Bush visit to the NAACP.
The visit to the National Convention, the appearance, shall we say, 1 month before the anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. You know, the one that kind of affected black people more than white people. And despite his claims of outreach to African Americans, he's been the first sitting president since Warren Harding to refuse to speak to the NAACP. But you know what? I mean, Michael, we have to look at it. I mean, he's got a 6-year snub of what I consider to be the most important and respected civil rights organization in the country. It's really kind of further evidence that his rhetoric of outreach to African Americans just flat out isn't, right?
Yeah, but the thing is that he wants to present himself as someone that he claims that he was totally caught by surprise by his party's writing off black voters. And I'm like, don't even try it, because he has a long history of injustice and violating blacks to begin with. We all know what happened in 2000 and 2004 elections, that the blacks were targeted to being blocked.
Well, why don't you go back before that? Go back before that. We have a gentleman that was in Texas, was dragged behind a pickup truck simply because he was black. He was dragged to his death.
We
I think his name was Harris? Was it James Harris?
And we also...
And Bush could have signed anti-hate legislation as governor of Texas at that time and chose not to. In fact, he chose not even to go to the funeral. We all know how black people were shut out of the 2000 election in Florida by his brother, and we also know that Kenneth Blackwell made it difficult for black people and other African American people to vote in Cleveland in 2004. So, I mean, do you think he's appealing to the black vote simply because it's an election year? I mean, is this grandstanding? Because, I mean, I don't know about you,
it's just a photo op, isn't it?
I mean, if I count all the black Republican senators, and I add that to all the black Republican congressmen, and I add that to the total number of black Republican congresswomen, well, I add zero to zero to zero, and I still get a big fat zero. And then I found it really quite disingenuous of him to stand up there and talk about how he called on the Senate to renew the Voting Rights Act, and he did this, and then of course within hours Bill Frist genuflects and puts it through, and of course everybody's going to vote on it, especially on our side of the fence. But what he failed to mention was that this was the same Voting Rights Act that his father, George Herbert Walker Bush, former president of the United States, in 1965 voted against. As a congressman for Houston, Herbert Walker Bush actually voted against this bill. I just find that extraordinary.
And you know what else? It gets worse than that, John. Well, since you want to go back to Texas, there were two other incidents I'm not sure you're aware of. Excuse me. One of which is, well, we all know that he holds the record for the most executions in the state of Texas as governor. And
most executions during his tenure, there were more people executed in the state of Texas than in all of the other states that permit the death penalty.
Yes.
Combined.
And one other thing is that I don't know if you heard of a particular black child that was on life support. He was critically ill. And his parents, who were already affected by Bush's economic policies on the negative sense, didn't have the means, didn't have the money to continue the medical service. What does Bush do? He gave an order to terminate the life support. Are you aware of that?
No.
Yeah,
you mean the Terry Schiavo deal?
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, exactly the opposite of Terry Schiavo, but he rushed home from his ranch.
Yeah, that's what gave a lot of outrage, and I think, I can't remember which other AmerCo host brought that up, but a lot of black people were talking about that. Then how the hell is it that he's going to give so much care about Terry Schiavo and make this a big public name? Nothing against Terry Schiavo, because to me, a life is a life. But, you know, you cannot have it both ways. And
well, you see, that's the difference between you and I, Michael, and the Republicans. We believe that a life is a life regardless of color, regardless of race or creed. Whereas the Republicans clearly believe that their lives are significantly more important than anybody else's life. Their vote is singularly more important than anybody else's vote. And that's really the way they think. It's a cultural issue with them. They just think like that. Hey, Michael, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I'm going to move on. 866-303-2270, John Elliott in on the Majority Report. I'm going to be right back with the chair of the San Diego Democratic Party. We're going to talk about voting machines and the illegal activities that happened in what we consider to be an illegal election here in San Diego. And in the next hour, we're going to have Richard Wolf, White House Bureau Chief for Newsweek Magazine, cover story this week on Bush and on the Middle East. We got a lot to go on the Middle East. We'll be talking about that. Join us. Stay tuned on the Air America Radio Network.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio. A liberal dose of the truth.
It's the best bike vacation ever.
3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities. It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreathe.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
Happy Monday. Thanks for joining us. We try and fill you with topics of the day, important topics, topics you need to know about. If you're listening to this program, the chances are that you might be leaning to the left politically. If you lean to the right, you're probably curious as to find out what we're thinking. Here's what we're thinking. We're thinking we need to have straight elections. We need to have solid elections. We need to have fair elections. And if you beat us, then damn, you beat us. But you beat us fair and square. When you don't beat us fair and square, that's when we get a little bent out of shape. Joining me now is Jess Durfee. Jess is the chair of the San Diego County Democratic Party. Jess, how are you?
Very good. How are you?
That's good. I'm excellent. We have a little bit of a thing going on here in San Diego that we need to tell our listening audience about. Most of them, I think, are familiar with the battle in the 50th District to replace
Duke Cunning scam, and our candidate, Francine Busby, was defeated by Brian Bilbray. And maybe she was, maybe she wasn't. But the big issue was the election was, in our understanding, an illegal election. People, poll workers with the San Diego County Registrar of Voters were allowed to take Diebold voting machines home with them and keep them in their garage and have sleepovers, right?
That's right. And it wasn't just for like a day or so. We've heard reports as much as 2 weeks before the election. They took these machines home, kept them in their garages, in their living rooms. Who knows where they kept them waiting for the election to actually occur.
How many machines are we talking about? Not that one would be okay, but...
Well, it's for this past election, we were using two types of machines. We were using the Diebold scanning machine, the optical scan machine, as well as the touchscreen machines. So this time it was actually a relatively low number because we had something like 1,600 polling locations. Each one, of course, had the scanning machine. And then each location had a touchscreen machine, which was intended for being able to assist the physically challenged in terms of being able to vote. The problem is, in the November election, we're going to be using just the touchscreen, which means probably 6 to 7 machines per polling location. So we're going to be doubling, tripling, or more the number of those machines that will be sitting in people's homes or garages or who knows where waiting for the election to occur come November.
Well, doesn't this invalidate a machine? Doesn't it make it an illegal election if these machines have actually been in the hands of people and not supervised, under supervised protection?
Well, that is part of our contention, and we went to supervisors last week and asked them to hold a public hearing so that this sort of thing could be vetted and that they could respond to the concerns of voters and taxpayers in San Diego County. And today we actually had a scathing editorial from the Union Tribune saying that we were basically the ones undermining election integrity because we asked these questions. And I guess if you ask questions, then, that's anti-integrity, you know, but if you can't get answers, that's part of the system.
For our listeners around the country and around the world, the San Diego Union Tribune holds the distinction of being the single most awful newspaper for a big city in any city in America. It is an appalling rag sheet. It is disgustingly right. They don't hide their opinions whatsoever. In fact, when they get in trouble, they'll roll out a Clinton editorial saying, you know, it was good that he was impeached. No. They're just appalling. So it does not surprise me at all. They generally take the Republican talking points and turn it into an editorial and sometimes even amplify that. So if you can imagine that around the world, it's interesting. Now, what this guy Michael Haas, who's the director of the county board of, what is it?
The Registrar of Voters.
Registrar of Voters of San Diego County Registrar of Voters. I understand that when we asked for a recount that he was pricing it at $1 a vote, unlike 14 cents a vote for a recount in Orange County.
Right.
Did he explain why?
Nope, I have never heard any explanation. That was another reason we were asking for this Board of Supervisors to hold a public hearing. That is one of the questions. The sleepover voting machines is one of the questions. The terrible, terrible job that the Registrar of Voters did in terms of getting out absentee ballots in a timely manner. There are just a number of problems that surfaced during the election, and we want a public hearing so that we can have these and other issues brought forward, addressed, and responded to. We think it would be good public policy that after every election, the Registrar of Voters and the Board of Supervisors in each and every county across the country hold a public hearing and give the voters and the taxpayers an opportunity to say what was good and what was bad about each election. That's part of the democratic process, public vetting of concerns and problems. And, yes, and on occasion saying you did a good job, but so far we haven't had that opportunity.
So here's the thing. The thing, if somebody takes a machine home, we are not saying they tampered with it, but we're not saying they didn't. We don't know.
That's
correct. If somebody has a machine at home, then that to me would invalidate the election. Yeah, what's been the response of the county board? What's been the response of the San Diego County Registrar of Voters? Have they responded to you directly?
Well, they have not. I actually have a call into him. He did call me back, but he didn't bother to call me on my cell phone, which is, of course, where he's going to catch me. Well,
let's get him on the line now. Let's get him on the line now. See what we can do. Let's just ask him the questions. You know, I mean, here's the chair of the San Diego Democratic Party. He's been trying to get in touch with him since the election in June 6th. That's almost almost 2 months ago. Guys, Carmen, can you dial up that number? All right, we're going to dial it to the San Diego County Registrar of Voters, and then they'll, through the magic of telecommunications, Jess, they'll flip us on the air, and I'll see if we can get him on the line with us and see if we can get him to answer some questions that you have.
Well, one of the things that was cited in the editorial in today's paper was that the poll supervisors had 16 hours of training. I have not talked to a single poll worker who had anything more than 4 hours of training. Some of them have actually reported having no training whatsoever. So that's one thing that we'd love to hear him talk about is where is this training coming from?
Okay. All right. So we're going ahead right now. We're dialing that number in San Diego. This is for the San Diego County Registrar of Voters. Guys, let me know when I've got a clean line on that.
Registrar of Voters office. If you wish to continue in English, press 1.
Can you go ahead and press 1?
Bienvenidos a la oficina del registro electoral del condado de San Diego.
Si can we press 1?
The
okay,
next prompt will be 4 for you.
Okay. Da, 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 da. Oh, it's an automated dialing machine, so we have to go through the prompts.
Yes.
Yeah, all we really need to do is get to an operator, and then as soon as we are on with an operator, then I'll be able to ask them if we can get this gentleman named Michael Haas. What did Michael Haas get paid a year? Do we know?
I don't know that. No, I don't. Yeah. It's a fairly good salary.
And he's appointed by the county San Diego County Board of Supervisors?
Yes, he is. That's who he reports to.
Okay. And so we haven't heard back from the San Diego County Board of Supervisors as to whether or not they're willing to hold a public hearing yet.
Well, actually, the chair of the Board of Supervisors, Mr. Horn, last week responded that we were a group of folks that were just, it was sour grapes over losing an election, and if there's not a problem, why should we have any hearings? Therefore, there would be no hearings.
What do you think would happen if the machines were taken home and a Republican won? Do you think they'd be just as quiet in saying that it was just sour grapes?
Yeah, well, it would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Voters, this is Susan.
Hi, Susan. It's John Elliott. I'm on the Majority Report on the Air America Radio Network nationwide, and I'm with Jess Durfee, the chair of the San Diego Democratic Party. Could we speak with Michael Haas, please?
Let me put you through to his secretary, okay?
Okay, what's your secretary's name?
Monique Roberts.
Great, thank you very much.
We appreciate your time and patience. Please stay on the line, and we'll be back in just a moment.
I wonder how long this will take.
This all sounds very familiar to me.
I bet. yes. Okay, well, we're just waiting for Monique to come on the line. And we're calling the San Diego County Board of Registrar of Voters here. Hi, is this Monique?
Monique's the voicemail is on.
Oh, I see. Is there anybody else that we could talk to? Because, we've got a nationwide radio audience. We're talking here with Jess, and we know that he's gone before the San Diego County Board of Supervisors. And we want some clarification on a few issues. Issue number one is the statement in the Union Tribune today that there were 16 hours of training for the poll workers, and some poll workers are claiming they never received any training at all. And, of course, we want to have a discussion as to why it's a dollar per vote for a recount versus 14 cents in, let's say, Orange County. And further, why people were allowed to take voting machines home. And is this going to be what's happening can we expect this to go on? So we are really looking for someone to do that. We're not really getting, Jess isn't getting any cooperation from the San Diego County Registrar of Voters. And so we've put you on nationwide radio live right now and thought that maybe that this would be a very good opportunity. And if it isn't, maybe you could check and let us know what would be a good time, and we will call back, and we will put you and Mr. Haas on live on the radio. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm up front working the reception.
I understand.
Okay.
Can I try
Monique one more time.
Okay, that would be great. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Let me see. I might try someone else. It's almost 5 o'clock.
Yeah, I know. It's 1:45.
Okay.
And your office closes at 5.
Yes.
Now, what we could do, if this is an inconvenient time, and we don't expect everybody to drop everything just because it's live radio, and because the whole world is listening, of course, but we'll be very happy to call back tomorrow and speak.
Radio show.
Yeah, it's the Majority Report on Air America Radio. We are obviously a progressive radio network, and we have a listening audience. We're live in New York. We're live in Miami. People who are listening on the internet all over the country.
All I can do is transfer you to voicemail and to Monique, and then she'll have to get back to you.
Oh, it's all right. Well, okay, that'll be fine.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. So, you know, Jess, it does not look like we're going to get too far. You've been through this, haven't you?
Just a few times, yes.
And you've never received any words from anybody?
Well, he actually has, like I said, he has attempted to call me back. So I do give him credit for making the attempt.
He's called you back once in a month?
Before the election, actually, he was pretty good about responding. We had a couple of
I wonder why not now, huh?
Strange.
Well, we're going to why don't we leave the message? Can we get through that?
565-5800. Thank you and have a nice day.
Hi, Monique. My name is John Elliott. I'm on the Air America Radio Network on the Majority Report. It's about 4:45, and we would like to speak with Michael Haas. I've got Jess Durfee on the line with me on. It's a live radio program, of course, and we wanted to get some answers to some questions, and we understand from the receptionist that your line is busy. So we would like to call back. I'll probably call back during the day tomorrow and set up a time where we can talk to Mr. Haas on the air live so that we can get some answers to some pressing questions. We want some satisfaction as to issues like the voting machines being held in people's garages and the number of hours of training that people receive and what we can expect going forward. So I do appreciate it if you would see if Michael would be available to talk with us on the air tomorrow, and if not tomorrow, Wednesday, and if not Wednesday, Thursday, and if not Thursday, Friday. You know, we can work this out so that he would be available, I trust. Thank you very much, Monique. I certainly appreciate it. Okay, Jess, you know what we're going to do? We're just going to keep on top of this, and as soon as we find out anything, we'll let you know.
Great. We appreciate your support.
Keep up the good work. Jess Durfee, chair of the San Diego Democratic Party. It's the Majority Report. John Elliott sitting in, and we'll be right back with more. We'll take your calls, 866-303-2270, and then the top of the hour, we're going to start talking about a little bit of a dust-up that's taking place in the Middle East.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio. We're not afraid to mess up our hair on radio.
It's Enid Live, weekday afternoon.
closer to me. Oh, and it's fine. Cause it means the torches of this life. One means 10,000 of other times. When a son goes to pain and lose their life. I said, whoa, good God, y'all.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cache Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cache Fever jackpot hits, a Cache Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cache Fever jackpot total and your Cache Club points online now at CacheCreek.com. So join Cache Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
Taking some time off, sitting in for Sam Cedar, John Elliott, the most dangerous liberal in America.
The Majority Report, the Air America Radio Network. John Elliott sitting in. How are you? Jack, Orange County, New York. How are you? Welcome to the Majority Report. You're on the air. Hello, Jack.
I see there's many Democrats against Joe Lieberman. I want to ask why is many Democrats against Joe Lieberman, because I see 90% is a real Democrat. He voted Democrat.
The reason the most Democrats are against Joe Lieberman is Joe Lieberman was for the war when most Democrats were against the war, and Joe Lieberman is still for the Iraqi war when most Democrats are still against the war. So that you kind of start right at that point. The second thing is, most Democrats have a pretty good memory. They don't like the fact that Joe Lieberman was the first Democrat and the only Democrat to stand on the floor of the United States Senate and make disparaging remarks about President Clinton. You don't see too many people standing on the floor of the United States Senate on the Republican side complaining about Bush. And, boy, they have had a plenty of things they could be standing up and complaining about. But we had Joe Lieberman acting very righteous and criticizing the President of the United States. And the other reason that we don't like Joe Lieberman is because he made fun of Ned Lamont, who nobody really knew who Ned Lamont was. He treated him like he was a gnat. He treated him like he has a divine right to own this particular election. And that as soon as it became apparent that Ned Lamont was not going away, well, my, all of a sudden, Joe decided, well, even if he loses this election, he's going to, in the primary, he's going to run as an independent. In other words, he's willing to play by the rules as long as the rules help him. But once the rules do not help him, he's just going to throw his hat in the ring and just try and divide the Democratic Party. So, I mean, the rules are fair and square. You come on, you win in the primary, that's it. You don't win in the primary, you go home. But that's not good enough for him. Now, he's gone from 40 points ahead in the polls to 3 points behind Ned Lamont. We offered him the opportunity to come on this program. We said, look, we'll clear the slates for you. This is live in New York. There's a lot of people in New York that listen on WLIB that live in Connecticut. There's a lot of Democrats. There's a lot of people that are your voters. And guess what? We'll allow you to come on this program anytime from Monday to Friday and talk. These are your people. These are Democrats. These are people. They would not even have the courtesy of responding. I don't know who's running his campaign, but they're clearly running scared. Does that answer your question?
But I see that I think the Lieberman will win the elections, and it's dangerous for the Democrats. They will lose the Senate.
Why would they lose the Senate? Because if Ned Lamont wins in lieu of Lieberman, then Ned Lamont is the Democratic candidate in the for the Senate in Connecticut, and the Republicans are going to have a very weak candidate.
But Lieberman is strong in the polls. By the regular elections, November the 7th, Lieberman is strong in the polls, and I think that Lieberman will run the elections.
Yeah, but we're talking about the, you asked the question of why don't we like him, and I answered the question. Prez, San Francisco, California, how are you? Welcome to the Majority Report. You're on with John Elliott.
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks. How are you?
Excellent. Nice. I haven't listened to you too much. I haven't had much of an opportunity out here on our radio station out here, but it sure is good to hear you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I had a couple of comments, talking about the current mess in Lebanon.
Oh, my.
I don't even know where to start, but I would say this. The people that are about the rapture, those, I just call them idiots. There is a section of just about every country and religion that have extremists, and within that section, most of them are kind of ignorant, and they want to have other people tell them what things mean. But there's a small group that controls those kind of people. And the fascists and the people, I call them fascists, are the same in every religion. The fundamentalists. They're about hate and about destruction.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the major problems. And also, from what I understand from people I know that are from Palestine and Lebanon, they are trying
out new
weapons.
Can you get the number for St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City?
Just like they do, just like they did in Gulf War One, just like they did when I was in Vietnam. They do the same things. And
Did you serve in Vietnam?
Yes.
Thank you for that.
I was there in 67 and 68.
Yeah, not a very popular war, but thank you for your service to America. There's a lot of people we know, some people born on July 6, 1946, that choose not to go. So, Chris, I really appreciate the call. You're absolutely right. I'm going to start the next hour. We're going to talk about the Hezbollah. We're going to talk about the Lebanese. We're going to talk about everybody but the Druze militia and the Israelis. We're going to talk about the United States, Europe, all the involvement, Condoleezza Rice, just a ton of stuff to get to. And we're going to have Richard Wolff, White House correspondent, in his interview, exclusive interview.
If you send messages,
of course we're after Saddam Hussein. I mean Bin Laden. He's. Let me say, I certainly hope so. Before I,
if you send messages,
that's a loaded question. First of all, I admire Senator Kerry's service to our country.
If you send messages.
I admire the fact that he is a great dad. We're facing
if you send messages.
Let me finish. And so the answer to your question is, no doubt about it, it's tough. Hard work.
Listening to AM 1320 KCTC.
Sacramento.
Sacramento's left channel. Because you deserve the truth.
CBS News, I'm Tammy McCormick. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice continues her Mideast tour with more meetings tomorrow in Israel.
We will talk about how to get to an enduring cessation of violence, how to deal with the significant humanitarian problems that are currently facing the people of Lebanon.
Earlier, Rice stopped in Beirut, as Laura Logan reports.
It was a surprise stop in the Lebanese capital for the Secretary of State, designed to show support for this country's embattled prime minister. Even more surprising was her meeting with well-known Hezbollah ally and Speaker of the Lebanese Parliament, Nabi Berri. Lebanese officials described the meetings as tense after Rice repeated the same conditions for a ceasefire as Israel.
That plan would call for a ceasefire at the same time an international force is deployed to South Lebanon. The Lebanese want an immediate ceasefire. The brutal heat wave continues in California, and the utility companies are struggling. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger today.
In order for us to really make it and to get through this day and the days ahead successfully, I want to urge the people of California to do everything they can to conserve energy.
Some residents are already sweating it out without power. KNX reporter Todd Lights has one man's story.
Dr. Brian Dillon is hot, literally and figuratively. He's been without power since Saturday afternoon in North Hills in temperatures that have reached 114 degrees. But he's also hot and bothered about the DWP's response to the protracted outage.
We're not crabbing about 1 or 2 hours of power being out. We're crabbing about 2 days worth.
And he's been told it could be 3 days until they can restore his power.
Gas prices are up again, more than $3 a gallon nationwide, the second highest pump price ever. A lot of motorists now say they're cutting back in other areas to fill up the tank.
Let me tell you, this car eats more than I do.
Gas prices are 71 cents higher than they were a year ago. The FDA has approved a sunscreen product that's been available in Europe and Canada for years, one that blocks a type of ultraviolet radiation. The ingredient is known as Mexoril.
We know that it is a very effective UVA blocker, so we're delighted to see it on the market joining the other sunscreen products available to Americans.
Dr. Stephen Stone is president of the American Academy of Dermatology. Coast Guard sending out aircraft to a listing ship off the Aleutian Islands. The cargo ship carrying automobiles is practically on its side. It has 22 crew members on board. Indiana authorities are investigating two interstate shootings, one of them deadly. They've set up a tip line now to help find the sniper, and they're comparing bullets found at the scene of the shootings about 100 miles apart. A Houston jury began deliberations today in the retrial of Andrea Yates, accused of drowning her young children in a bathtub. The jurors are being sequestered. On Wall Street today, the Dow finished higher, 182 points up at 11,051. The NASDAQ was up 41. This is CBS News.
I want to let you in on a little secret, but before I do, could all you car dealers, bankers, and credit card companies switch over to the All Sappy Love Songs All Day Long station? Good. For the rest of you, here's the secret. FreeCreditReport.com. If you know your credit score going in, you may be able to cut a better deal on car loans, refis, even credit cards. And you'll find your free credit score and report at FreeCreditReport.com. That's the secret. Get your free credit score and report with enrollment in Triple Advantage at FreeCreditReport.com. Get the score.
Truck doesn't have coverage, but if my boat hit it, will my boat policy pay for the damage to my truck?
That's a real question that was put to the licensed insurance experts at Progressive Direct. When you call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE, we'll answer your questions and help you find the policy that best fits you. So whether your question's unique or typical,
will I get a discount if I insure both my cars with you?
In fact, you will. Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Progressive Direct Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Available in most states and situations.
Notice your paycheck hasn't necessarily increased with your age. If you have a college degree, you're not alone, as CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato reports.
Wages for workers with four-year degrees are stagnating for the first time in more than 30 years. The Los Angeles Times reports that earnings fell more than 5% during President Bush's first term, according to White House economists. Why? More jobs are being moved to foreign countries, and corporations are replacing salaried employees with part-timers and freelancers. Some majors are still profitable, the paper says. Business administration, marketing, and accounting, for instance. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
President Bush has signed a bill into law that would bar condominium and other homeowner groups from restricting whether residents can display flags. In a statement, the president said the bill protects citizens' rights to express their patriotism without burdensome restrictions. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
I always consider myself the father of four boys, even though two of my sons are gone. Our twins, Kevin and Brian, died when their boat capsized. Bad weather, cold water, and the absence of life jackets contributed to their deaths. If I can help one person avoid the daily heartbreak that my wife and family must endure, then asking you to be responsible on your boat will be well worth my time. Visit BoatSmarter.com, and remember, if it's your boat, it's your responsibility.
It's not something that you just dump something on. truck. It's a series of tubes. Tubes. Why? Enormous tubes. Massive, massive tubes. It really is the internet consumer bill of rights. Because he got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the internet commercially. The world has turned against this. If your own personal internet, that is you and me. You and me is that tubes. The internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Majority Report on the Air America Radio Network. John Elliott from KLSD San Diego sitting in for Sam and welcoming you to a Monday evening. How are you? I hope you're a little bit cool. We like to think of ourselves as the alarm clock for your political soul, and but at the same time, we're going to give you air conditioning for your mind when it comes to politics. Rocco, Rosendale, New York. How are you? Welcome to the Majority Report. You're on with John Elliott. How you doing?
How you doing, John?
I'm doing fine, Rocco. What's on your mind?
Well, I just want to straighten out the prior caller who called up asking why Democrats don't like Joe Lieberman. Now, I don't live in Connecticut, but I live nearby Connecticut. And I'll tell you this. Joe Lieberman is a Democrat in name only, okay?
And
he voted, even though the when polled, the populace of Democrats in Connecticut were only 30% in favor of the war in Iraq, Lieberman voted for it. Even less were for the occupation of Iraq. He voted for the occupation of Iraq. When Kerry brought up a proposal, Russ Feingold and Kerry brought up a proposal to get the U.S. troops out of Iraq, where do you think Lieberman stood on that? He was against it. So... And he's trying to short-circuit the process also to get a Republican there when he said that if he loses the primary, he's going to run independent.
That's the thing that most infuriates me, because he doesn't want to play by the rules. The rules are okay as long as he can win.
Right.
But when it looks like that he's going to have trouble winning on this, Rocco, he decides, well, if I don't win in the primary because it'll only be the passionate Dems that come out in the primary, I'm going to appeal to the masses in November when we have a much larger turnout and hopefully prevail at that point in time. And you know, that's not the way that things are played. I talked to Howard Dean. Howard Dean was out here in Southern California at a Dem Fest a couple of weeks ago, and I said to him, I said, who are you supporting in Connecticut? He said, whoever wins the primary. He said, if Ned Lamont wins the primary, we're not deciding who wins the primary. Our job as the Democratic National Committee is to support Democratic candidates, and what we're going to do is we're going to support whoever wins. If Ned Lamont wins, we're going to support Ned and stand with Ned. And if Joe wins, we're going to stand with Joe. It's whoever the people choose. Of course, that's what he has to do. But you know, as opposed to right now, where you've got Barbara Boxer, who I happen to like a lot from my home state, rushing up to Hartford to try and campaign for Joe. You've got Bill Clinton, who he trashed on the floor of the Senate, going up there to support him. I mean, he's calling in all the big markers that he possibly can. The most liberal senator in the United States Senate is Barbara Boxer. So he's trying to pull in Barbara Boxer to say, see, look at me. Look at me. I'm a liberal, for God's sake.
Yeah,
and then
right.
He's pulling in Clinton, who's been the most popular Democrat in a lifetime. So
he's the best Republican president we've had.
Rocco, thanks a million for the call.
You're quite welcome.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Jim, Lever, PA, how are you? Welcome to the program. How are you doing in Pennsylvania tonight?
Thank you, John, for having me on.
Pleasure, Jim. We've just decided here that Santorum has absolutely no shot when you have all of the NASCAR fans walking through the Pocono Speedway ignoring his booth and just pretending it doesn't even exist.
Well, my thought for the night is that I would like to be able to put down on my ballot when I vote, Air America rocks.
And you know that's what? We'd love you to be able to put that down.
That's a serious proposition because with the writing option, we could write in a short phrase of our choice.
You write in a phrase of our choice and make it a popular phrase, and then when Al runs in Pennsylvania to take Norm Coleman out from the United States Senate, Al would be fabulous as a United States Senator. He has an enormous heart. He's enormously bright. He's very well informed, clearly far ahead of Norm Coleman on any of those issues. And he actually was born and raised in Minnesota, so he's got a tremendous opportunity. He hasn't said that he's running. I think he's running, but he won't admit he's running. And, of course, most of the Dems aren't running. You know, you hear Barack Obama hasn't said he's running. He's running. Tom Daschle hasn't said he's running. He's running. He's holding two fundraisers this week. Wonder why. Joe Biden is always running. Biden always is running until he wets his finger, sticks it up in the air, sees the way the wind is blowing, and then decides not to run. And I hear Al Gore is running. So we have a lot of people to choose from other than the cast of characters that that we already know are running, like Mark Warner and probably Joe Lieberman. Hey, thanks for the call. I really appreciate it. I love the idea of you writing that in. The Air America Radio Network's The Majority Report. I'm John Elliott, 866-303-2270. I've kept you in suspense long enough, haven't I? We need to talk about Israel. We need to talk about Hezbollah. We need to talk about Bush and Condi and Israel and Lebanon and civilian deaths and diplomatic pressures and Israel hurrying to completely destroy Hezbollah before the world pressures a ceasefire. It's an article in an Israeli newspaper over the weekend says the United States is going to give Israel another week for the attacks. We have this this lip service being being paid by Condi and Bush, the delaying tactics. Condi's not welcome for a summit in Egypt, so they're moving it to Rome. And then she says a ceasefire isn't the issue. We need a lasting peace, and a ceasefire doesn't give us a lasting peace. So let the killing continue, unabated, with encouragement from the United States, while Condi plays the stalling game. Drops into Beirut today. Did you see that? Condi's on her way to Rome, drops into Beirut. Do you think the bombing raid stopped while she was there? Of course they did. What does that say? I talked to Christopher Dickey last week. He called on my show. He called live from Amman, Jordan. He is, in my opinion, the finest foreign correspondent, print foreign correspondent that we have as Americans. I think Christiane Amanpour is the best electronic foreign correspondent, personal opinion. And I think Chris Dickey is by far and away the best. He is the Mideast bureau chief for Newsweek magazine. He lives in Paris. He's lived in the Middle East for 20 years. He said to me what people need to understand is this is a proxy fight between Iran and Israel using Hezbollah. And he told me something that I didn't know, and that is that Iran founded Hezbollah. I didn't know that. He did tell me, he did say they were funding Hezbollah, which I did know. He said basically Syria's on the sidelines on this one. This is really Iran, and Iran is the one that is supplying the missiles. Iran is the one that is pulling the strings. Iran sits on the board of Hezbollah. And I said, well, you know, what are we dealing with in Hezbollah? And he said, well, first of all, they're Lebanese, so the Prime Minister of Lebanon cannot throw them out because they are Lebanese in his own country. They also are a political party, and Hezbollah actually has representatives sitting in the Lebanese parliament. So he said probably the smartest thing that I had heard anybody ever say, and that is it's going to get worse before it gets worse. And when you think about that, that says a lot. And he says what people need to understand, and we tend to take the view of the United States, but he said what people need to understand is that there is the quote-unquote occupied territories, and I offered the fact that occupied territories is a noun as opposed to an adjective, and he agreed. And he said in occupied territories, when people are an occupied people, they tend to look at the occupiers as oppressors, and they tend to react not too favorably to them. He said, look, let's give you an example. The Civil War. Here in the United States, a very just war, but the reality was the North did occupy the South. It was only 150 years ago. Do you think everybody in the South has forgotten about that little spat? Well, of course not. People in the South still remember it. And I know there's Southerners listening to this program right now. They can pick up the phone and call us and say, yeah, you know, them Yankees, you know. And there's still some grudge going on. I mean, there's still a lot of it's generation after generation. So if you think in terms like that, and you think about the fact that Israel occupied southern Lebanon from 1982 until 2000, Israel has occupied the West Bank, Israel occupied the Gaza Strip, and various places. And now listen, you know, don't call and tell me I'm an anti-Semite because I'm not. I'm very, very much in support of Israel. I'm very much, in fact, in support of the fact that Israel needs to be Israel. It needs to be an independent state. It needs to be strong, and it needs to be able to defend itself. But I don't consider when two soldiers are abducted, that the unwarranted bombings that have taken place in Beirut. If you want to go after Hezbollah and Hezbollah's strongholds in the south, that's fine. But to destroy and lay waste to Beirut is just a little bit difficult for me. So it's difficult for me to support. So when I see the fact that this has been going on for a while, it with no end in sight, and we have casualties and civilian casualties mounting up, this just turns the Arab world against us. Now, I want you to listen to this. I want you to listen to me, and then I want you to think about what I'm going to say, because I'm going to tell you something, and then I'm going to ask you a question. And then I'm going to take a break, and when I come back, I want to hear your answers. Over the weekend, there was a front-page story in the New York Times, and it said U.S. speeds up bombs for deliveries for Israelis. And here's the first paragraph. The Bush administration is rushing a delivery of precision-guided bombs to Israel, which requested the expedited shipment last week after beginning its air campaign against Hezbollah targets in Lebanon, American officials said Friday. Excuse me. The decision to quickly ship the weapons to Israel was made with relatively little debate within the Bush administration, the official said. Its disclosure threatens to anger Arab governments and others because of the appearance the United States is actively aiding the Israeli bombing campaign in a way that could be compared to Iran's efforts to arm and resupply Hezbollah. So here's what you have. You have that story in the New York Times that is now around the world. It's on Al Jazeera and it's every major newspaper and news outlet in the Middle East and in the Arab world. And what it's saying is that Israel is going out and it is doing indiscriminate or discriminate, depending upon your point of view, bombing of Lebanon. And it is getting its weaponry from the United States. And it needs more. So they asked for precision-guided bombs, and they asked for a rush shipment to be delivered. And the United States immediately acquiesced to that and said, yeah, we'll rush the shipment over there. So if the United States is rushing to ship precision-guided missiles to Iran that they can use on Lebanon, what is different than Iran supplying Hezbollah with weaponry that it can use on Israel? From the 30,000 feet view, I think you have to say that they look very much the same. And now we get back to, why do they hate us in the Islamic world? They don't hate us because of who we are. They hate us because of what we do. John Elliott on the Majority Report on the Air America Radio Network. We'll be right back.
The Majority Report.
May God continue to bless the United States of America.
God bless us all. If there is a God.
It's the Morning Retort with...
So hot today in New York City, that naked guy on the subway was screaming, "Who's crazy now?"
Hot.
Yeah. Hot down in Washington, D.C., Dick Cheney replaced his pacemaker with an ice maker. Is that hot? It's so hot, Christie Brinkley is now dating Ben and Jerry.
Whoa!
It's so hot today, ladies and gentlemen, George W. Bush told Al Roker to stop doing that. That's what he said. That's what President Bush said at the G8 summit. He was overheard using a dirty language at the G8 summit. And not only that, later he was ejected for headbutting.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Return on investment we possibly can. We do that by getting great guests. We're going to have a great guest this hour. If you pick up this week's Newsweek magazine, you will see, or if you get it delivered, you will see Weight of the World, a picture of President Bush on the cover, wearing his Air Force One windbreaker with his logo with the presidential seal on the shoulder, on the breast. It doesn't show you the other breast pocket because I know it says The Decider. I just know it does. Richard Wolff is the White House correspondent for Newsweek. He has written the cover story. He's going to be joining us this hour. It's obviously we're going to be talking about Bush's reaction to things happening in the Middle East, and we're going to take your calls and talk to you specifically about that. John, Miami Beach, Florida, how are you? Welcome to the Majority Report. You're on with John Elliott. How are you doing?
Good, John Elliott. How you doing?
I'm fine, sir.
You said you're the most dangerous liberal in America. I thought I was.
President accounted for it. No, hey, man.
Hey, listen, here's a good discussion here. Are we fighting over land over there, or are we fighting over religious beliefs? Have we got into that yet, or what's the story here? I mean,
depends on which war you're talking about.
I'm talking about the Middle East. I'm talking about, you know, Hezbollah.
Ah, the whole big picture? The whole big picture?
The whole nine yards, you know?
Well, it depends on who you talk to in the Bush administration. Remember, we used to have a general in the Bush administration who said that I looked at the Arabs and I told the Arabs that my God's a bigger God than their God. So, I mean, when you start putting it on those terms, it's a very much a religious war. It's very much a fundamentalist war between the Christian Reich in this side, which is the extreme right wing, the neo-nutballs of the Republican Party, against the Islamic extremists representing the Muslims on the other side. So you have two factions of lunatics, the crazy right-wing nut Christian Reichs on this side, and you have the lunatics of the zealots on the Islamic side. And, it, you know, they're the ones that are amping up the noise. In the meantime, the rest of us kind of get dragged into the catfight.
Now, listen to this, John. I mean, if we gave it up, if Israel gave some of the hostages up, right, and some of the people that are keeping, right, and a swap, would that ease this crisis, or is that just a futile effort? What do you think?
I think it's a futile effort because although it may work this time, it gives people the thought that they can then take hostages and demand release of prisoners. And most responsible countries in the Western world will not react to types of threats like that. They will not react to releasing of prisoners. I don't think for one moment that if anybody took serious people hostage from this country, if, for example, if Condoleezza Rice was captured and we were told we had to release everybody in Guantanamo,
that's not a bad idea.
Well, actually, as I was saying it, I started to think about it. I was thinking, you know, it's either that or, you know, which would you like, either that or a Diet Coke? And that's a tough choice, you know. It's So, no, I don't think countries should give in to terrorists' demands. I think that that is something that that we have to realize, that in a civilized society, you just can't take people hostage and then demand certain things in return. I just don't think it works very well. But I do think that somebody needs to do something pretty damn fast over there and cool this thing down. And,
hey, John, my opinion is that I think Kennedy or Soros could do it. I think she could ease the situation, you know. But I firmly believe, you know, that Israel's got to release some of those prisoners. This thing's going to happen, you know. John Mihalchik signing off, man. John Mihalchik out.
Thanks, John. I appreciate the call from Miami. Majority Report, John Elliott, in your ear. David, Englewood, New Jersey, how are you? Welcome to the Majority Report.
Hi, John, how you doing?
How are you?
Hi, John, when you were talking about the terrorists, are you talking about Israel or the Palestinians?
I'm talking about any terrorists. I'm talking about any terrorists. And I haven't used the word terrorist tonight, by the way, but if I have to pick terrorists...
No, you did it 30 seconds ago.
What did I say?
You said, you talked about giving in to terrorists.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's right. Giving in to terror would be anybody, any terrorist, whether they're Islamic terrorists. I mean, I consider Timothy McVeigh a terrorist. I consider the Washington snipers terrorists.
Certainly the Israeli government are terrorists also. And actually, the point I'm trying to make is, you said before that this whole incident, which magazines like Newsweek perpetuate, was started by the kidnapping of the two Israeli soldiers. I don't know if you heard Noam Chomsky on Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! Last week, but he actually explained that the kidnapping of the Israeli soldiers was in a response to Israel kidnapping a father, a doctor, and his son. Are you familiar with the story?
No, I wasn't familiar with that, but what I will tell you this. I will tell you that there was an article over the weekend in the San Francisco Chronicle that many of our listeners did not have the opportunity of seeing because it appeared over the weekend, of course. And it said that this has been a plan of Israel's for 3 years. They were waiting for a trigger mechanism. They were geared up for it. They were planning it. They were ready to go. And the reality was this was just the one little incident that they needed. Now, whether or not it was sparked by the incident that you're talking about that Noam Chomsky referred to, or whether or not it was sparked by something else, such as just taking prisoners. They were already willing and able to do this. The United States knew it was going to happen. This plan was 3 years in the offing, and it bothers me greatly that this was planned and triggered and carried out. It's the Majority Report. We'll be back with Richard Wolff, Newsweek's Washington correspondent, White House bureau chief, on his cover story in Newsweek this week.
You're listening to AM 13.
It's the best bike vacation ever.
3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities. It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Immigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreathe.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
Money and get the promotion you deserve. Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
In the world of a... These are troubled times. We have to think our way out. We can't faith our way out. It's not a coincidence that so much of Bush's base are faith people, because Bush works in mysterious ways. It helps to have faith. It really does. But religion, it stops people from thinking because they think all the answers are in that one book. It impedes progress. It justifies crazy people. Flying planes into a building was a faith-based initiative. Matters of otherwise common sense become points of debate. Like gay marriage, would we even be having this discussion about whether gay people can marry except for religion? Of course the Catholic Church doesn't want gay men to marry. Half the priesthood would walk out the door the first day and marry the UPS driver.
Hey, you streaming listeners, open your media player and click on the link to NoHaggleMortgage.com right now, and you can save thousands on your mortgage loan. Simple, easy, and takes less than 30 seconds. For the first time, homeowners can now have direct access to the same rates that mortgage brokers get. That's right, the same rates that mortgage brokers get. Three things allow NoHaggleMortgage.com to get the lowest mortgage rates in the industry. One, no commissions to pay loan officers. Two, most of the work is done over the internet, saving you a lot of money. 3. No haggling. Click on the link now, then click on Quick Quote to find out what rate you can get. Get your money faster and save thousands. No gimmicks, no middleman, no haggling. Just simple, fast, friendly, low-rate mortgage loans. Skip the loan officer. Go direct to NoHaggleMortgage.com. You're already online. Take 30 seconds and find out for yourself. Or go to NoHaggleMortgage.com. Check it out today. Licensed by the DOC.
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sam.
To understand it.
Miss Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. Campaign is dead. See how easy it was?
It was that easy.
See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You think you get all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
If Romney gets the nomination, the tunnels win. Think about it. Tourists, Terra, Earth, tunnels.
Do the math, Scott!
It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Now, back to the most dangerous liberal in America, John Elliott.
Report on the Air America Advanced Radio Network. It's Monday evening. Thank you for joining us. As mentioned at the top of the show, we do absolutely everything we possibly can to get you the best guests in the world. And this gentleman has made himself available on very short notice.
If you pick up Newsweek, as I do every week, I have it delivered. And if I don't have it delivered, if I'm on the road, I pick it up at the newsstand, I end up with two. Newsweek is the magazine that is on top of more stories. And again, it proves this week with a cover story, Weight of the World, an exclusive behind-the-scenes interview with President Bush as the Middle East explodes. The author of the piece is Richard Wolff, the White House correspondent for Newsweek, who joins us on the line. How are you? Welcome to the program.
My pleasure. I wish there were more people who bought two copies like you.
Well, you know, I go out of my way to do that. I realize that, you know, they're light, they're easy, they fit in my pocket. How are you? You had a whirlwind. You know, you're flying at the front of the plane with the president, going over to Russia, going over to Germany, and you really were given complete access to him, weren't you?
There was a lot of access on the plane and behind the scenes, you know, in Russia as well, between meetings with world leaders. And in many ways, that was more interesting when he was more informal and more freewheeling.
Yeah, I seem to get from reading your piece today that you do seem to get more out of him when he is not as structured and
right.
And when he gets to sort of backslap people or massage people or chew fat at people.
You know, he's been president for 6 years. I've actually been covering him since 1999 when he was Texas governor and running for the White House. And, you know, pretty much every question that could be asked of him has been asked, and he has an answer for it. So one of the reasons I wanted to do this was to try and see if I could get something new out of him. And I think in Newsweek thinks that we did that. We didn't know that obviously this crisis was going to happen, and that gave it more. There was obviously more events going on, more things to deal with. But like I said, you know, press conferences, media interviews, he's done them all. And, you know, there's only a limited use in asking him the same questions about Iraq.
How is he taken by the world media? Well, we get this sense when we read the foreign magazines, Richard, that they look at him as a stumbling buffoon, a cowboy. Incidents as follows. Number one, the question when he was asked by a member of the German media when he was meeting with President Merkel at the or Chancellor Merkel at the at a news conference before the barbecue with the wild boar, and he was going to be involved in carving the boar, and somebody asked him a question about what's going on in the Middle East between Israel and the Hezbollah, and his answer was, I thought you were going to ask about the pig, which has been replayed incessantly over here as poking fun at him, giving Merkel the back rub, the spontaneous back rub. I mean, most people say, you know, most men in the world know that you don't touch another woman in another country, especially the Chancellor of Germany, without invitation. And then to watch him chewing with his mouth open, displaying, shall we say, the worst of Emily Post, and calling Blair by his last name. And it's just, he comes across as a boor, and he comes across as someone who, you know, the perpetual frat boy. What's your take on that, at the other incidents that we really didn't get to see?
Well, yes, first of all, what does the rest of the world make of it? And you're right, all of these things confirm their stereotype of him, and more broadly, of Americans in general. I mean, the reason he's...
Wait a minute. Are they really looking at him as a representative
absolutely.
Of us, as our culture?
Oh, absolutely. Wow. That is why he is... his caricature is so powerful for the rest of the world. You know, this idea that... he's too powerful. He doesn't know how to exercise power. He's uncivilized. This has been the stereotype of Americans going back 100 years. And you know, if only he and America listened more to the wise counsels of Europe, then you know, he'd learn how to exercise power properly, the old-fashioned way. And that's the image of him, and it's the image of America. He's the archetypal American, and that's why it's so powerful. That's why, frankly, there's not a lot he could do. Now, of course. Some of the way he approached things well before 9/11 really kind of confirmed that idea to people. But, you know, this has been said about American presence before, and it will be said about them again.
Well, we've got him on an open mic remarking to, it appears to be, the leader of China, saying, how long is it going to take you to get home? 8 hours. No
right.
kidding. You must have a big country.
Right.
And I sit there and say, isn't that fourth grade geography? And just sort of... You sort of shake your head, and I think what you're saying, and let me try and pull this out of you, if I may, is that if he behaved in a more civilized fashion, if he was more gracious, if he was more accommodating to world manners, generally accepted world manners, he might get a lot more done with the leaders of the world rather than his cowboy-esque Gary Cooper strutting, don't you
yeah,
think?
Yeah, well, let me put it like this. I don't think the manners thing really makes much difference, although it's very entertaining TV. And yeah, listen, I was sitting opposite him on Air Force One, right, sitting next to him on Air Force One while he was demolishing a bowl of popcorn. And it wasn't a lot of difference from that bread roll episode, except there was more popcorn going in and coming out. But the thing about... I love
the visual on that.
Yeah. And the thing about the... the thing about the manners thing, listen, a lot of these other leaders behave kind of strangely, and their manners are not always perfect. I mean, Chirac can be rude to people verbally. He's insulted Britain and British food and said the only thing that Britain contributed to agriculture was mad cow disease. I mean, you know, rudeness. Germany's old Chancellor Helmut Kohl was famous for the way he ate sausages and drank vast quantities of beer. I mean, so I don't think the personal manner thing is nearly as important as the formal diplomacy that President Bush clearly is very uncomfortable with. I mean, you know, he hated being in these big summit sessions. He doesn't like it when he's one voice among many. He's much, much better, I have to say, and very effective when it's one-on-one. He can charm another leader, and these are shorter meetings that basically he can control. Diplomacy on his own terms, fine. Diplomacy in these structured sessions where, you know, you're basically having a compromise and a negotiation. He doesn't like that and doesn't really have any time for it.
No, and that comes across very clearly in your article. You do point that out exceptionally well, that he wants to go one-on-one with people. And his interview with Putin and just back and forth and joshing back and forth was one thing. But getting in the big picture where he's one of many, and the fact that he can't sit at the head of the table because it's Putin's house with the G8 taking place there, is something that chafes him. It bothers
him.
And
these are small things that tell you something bigger. I mean, look, take the UN, for instance. I mean, the UN is a case where even in the Security Council, there are four other permanent members who all have a veto. When you're talking about the General Assembly, everybody gets a vote. And you know, those kinds of things, treaties, you know, that are negotiated in exactly that kind of group session, philosophically, personally, he doesn't like it. What he sees is he sees the world in very clear terms for him and very stark terms for other people. And he wants the other people to fit into that worldview. And if they don't, then he doesn't really want to know them.
Let's talk about the Middle East and his response. So you're planning on this trip, and this is going to get you a behind-the-scenes with the guy, and he's going to the G8, much like he did last year at Edinburgh when the trains blew up in London. And all of a sudden, this Lebanese Hezbollah-Israel thing blows up. Was he nimble on his feet in handling this? Was he frustrated? Was he befuddled? What was his demeanor as you saw him on the plane?
I think one of his strengths, and you can argue it's one of his weaknesses, is that he sees these things, again, in very clear terms. And very quickly, he really saw this through the prism of the war on terror, and not unreasonably so. I mean, Hezbollah is, as many administration officials have called them, they are the A-team of terrorism. They have a long history of not just anti-Israeli terrorism, but, you know, a lot of people saw their hand in the Beirut bombings of the barracks in 83. And, you know, so, and their ties to Iran, their operational coordination with Syria, he saw very clearly that this was a regional question and that Hezbollah needed to be suppressed and crushed, both to keep Syria out of Lebanon and to tell Iran to stop messing around with the region, because he saw it as a power grab. Now, as I said, that gives him a great amount of clarity and vision. You know, some people have said, well, you didn't see him making lots of decisions, and, you know, that wasn't what he was trying to do. He made an analytical interpretation of the events, and that has stuck with this administration all the way through. People say, why isn't he sending an envoy? Why aren't they brokering a peace deal? Well, the answer is because he wants to defeat Hezbollah and push Syria and Iran back. And, you know, you don't broker a peace deal if basically what you want is victory.
No. I spoke to your colleague Chris Dickey last week, and I talked to him in Amman, and he was saying how this is really a proxy between Iran and Israel, and that the Hezbollah are Lebanese, that they sit in the parliament in Lebanon, Iran sits on their board. Iran pulls the strings. Iran supplies them with weaponry. What we're getting a lot of is this here, and I don't know whether this comes across in your meetings with the president and with the senior White House staff that travels with him, but there was an article in the New York Times this weekend that said the United States received an urgent order to amp up its delivery of precision-guided weaponry to the Israelis, and the Bush administration didn't dally on that, didn't spend a lot of time on that. Mm-hmm. They just immediately green-lighted it, and away these weapons go. So on one side, you have the American point of view in the media, which is Hezbollah is a terrorist organization backed by Iran. Iran's giving them missiles, which, of course, is true. But on the other hand, you have Israel that is really giving in what many people in the world, even a lot of my Jewish friends, consider to be an over-the-top response to this, situation with Hezbollah. And they're being armed by the United States. This harms us greatly in the eyes of the Arab world, and we're trying to bring this alleged peace into Iraq, which is off the news screens for a while. Can you comment on that type of feeling as you travel around the world?
Well, it's very widespread. America's relationship to Israel is very close, and in this crisis, the administration shares the analysis and the views of the Israeli government. On the other hand, they're also trying to stand up the Lebanese government, and it's very hard. And in theory, the Israelis like the Lebanese government too. I mean, they're bombing a country and supporting its government at the same time. It's a very fine line.
It is a fine line, and my understanding is that Israel does respect the government as much as they can. It's a very fragile government, a fragile democracy. And that is a fine line. We noticed that when Condoleezza Rice pre-G8 meeting had been in Russia with the foreign minister, she kind of put her mitt in the ringer, and when she said, well, you know, Lebanon's really the only elected democracy in the Middle East, and that's fragile unless, of course, you include Iraq. And I thought, well, the two words that come to my mind are Israel and Palestine. And did she make any faux pas like that, that where you didn't mention that? You treated her kind of nice, and of course your focus was on the president, but did she make any embarrassing situations from a Department of State protocol?
I didn't see her doing it. She wasn't nearly as sort of taking a public role. When the president is traveling, they like to let him do the speaking. You know, I did talk to her in some of the interviews where I was also talking to the president, and also she did a press briefing where, pretty much in the early stages of this crisis, where she actually told me at the time this idea of a peacekeeping force was premature, and then a day or two later it turned out that Tony Blair was pushing it hard and it rose to the top of the agenda again. But actually the faux pas really came on this in terms of public comments from the president, and as I put in the piece, you know, the White House put out a statement saying that Israel needed to show restraint, but that the real cause of the problem was Hezbollah and its backers, Syria and Iran. And it took the president three or four times before he could repeat the terms of that statement. First time, he forgot to mention Iran. Second time, he forgot to mention Iran and forgot to call on Israel for restraint. And each time this happened, people in the press would bug administration officials saying, oh, have you changed your policy? Is this a sign of something? And actually, people in the region were also looking at what the president was saying and trying to figure out what this all meant. In actual fact, he just forgot.
Yeah, it's a sign that he doesn't follow the script very well.
He isn't familiar with the nuance of all of this.
No, perhaps not. A marvelous piece, as always. Richard Wolff, senior White House correspondent for Newsweek. It is the cover story in Newsweek. It has several pages. It deserves it. You've got this great picture in the rotunda of a number of very serious world leaders, and President Bush is standing in the middle with his hands in his pockets, and the caption that comes to mind is, I could be watching SportsCenter on ESPN rather than being here. Richard, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks very much for another wonderful piece.
Thank you.
Thanks. Richard Wolff, senior White House correspondent for Newsweek magazine, on the Majority Report with John Elliott. We've got lots more. We're going to be talking about this little bit of nasty business taking place in the Middle East. We'll be right back after we sell you something on the Air America Radio Network.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio. The left just got a little bit louder.
It's the Randy Rhodes Show. I was in the water before I knew what happened. I reached up to stop an or two from going overboard. The next thing I knew, I was overboard too. Watching my boat, there was nothing I could do to avoid being hit. The first time the propeller cut through my back. The second time, it cut my hand and arm. A moment of operator inattention, a lifetime of can't forget. Because I survived, I can tell you how important it is to be responsible on your boat. Visit BoatSmarter.com and remember, if it's your boat, it's your responsibility.
Durst here.
The fact that somebody like Rush Limbaugh, who has made a career preaching that anybody who does drugs has got to go right to jail, do not pass go, no questions asked, right to jail, gets caught doing 30 OxyContin a day. 30 OxyContin? Do you have any idea how high that is? I don't, and I've been pretty high. But, wow, this guy is putting up Elvis numbers, ladies and gentlemen. But how does he get away with it? They say, well, he's on medication. Oh, see, that's not drugs. You know what, pal? We all got our medication, don't we? They can have an ad on TV that said, ask your doctor if Jack Daniels is right for you. And it would not be out of place thematically.
Majority Report is taking some time off. Sitting in for Sam Cedar, John Elliott, the most dangerous liberal in America.
That would be me. 866-303-2270, 866-303-2270. How great a guest is Richard Wolff? Of course, I don't suppose you get to be the White House bureau chief and senior White House correspondent for the preeminent news magazine in America without being pretty damn fine at what it is you do. Santa Fe, New Mexico. Joan, how are you? Welcome to the Majority Report. You're on with John Elliott on the Air America Radio Network. How are you doing tonight?
Good. I appreciate what you're doing. And I was calling because, you know, I hearken back to shock and awe. And when you were talking earlier about terrorism, that to me is the definition of terrorism. And yet I agree. Yeah, and I don't see anybody bringing it up really very much, you know, like the general public. It's just not, it's been conveniently put on the back burner.
Well, you know, there's so much with this guy that has been put on the back burner, and we keep needing people like you and me to get out there and remind us. We try and keep score on all of these things, but there's so many. I mean, shock and awe.
Yeah, well, shock and awe was so egregious, and it's the definition of the word, you know.
Yeah. You know, and I don't know whether or not you heard when I was guest hosting before.
I missed part of this.
I had Harlan Ullman on, and Harlan's a very interesting guy. Swift boat captain, 150 missions in Vietnam, knows John Kerry, obviously. In addition to that, he commandeered or commanded a ship in the Persian Gulf. He has been a tremendous advisor on the military affairs to both the Rumsfelds and the Zbigniew Brzezinski, so he's an equal opportunity guy. He's with the Center for Strategic and International Studies at Johns Hopkins University, and he created the doctrine of shock and awe. And when I had him on, I said, what about that? He said, you know, that phrase was hijacked by the Bush administration and turned into a war slogan. And that's not what it was supposed to be. And he went into a little bit of a detail. But the shock and awe that you're referring to, John, is exactly that. It's a terrorist act. It's here we're coming. You're not ready for it. We're going to come in. We're going to pound you with so much firepower from the air. We're going to shock you, and everyone's going to be in awe. And then you're all going to fall down and go boom, and we'll come in and wipe you up. And to watch, you know, and I can remember watching CNN the night when, you know, Bush had done, I'm giving Saddam Hussein and his boys 24 hours to leave Dodge, and he did that cowboy nonsense. And then I'm watching there as they're waiting for the attacks to begin, and then you suddenly see the skies light up and all these bombs going off at palaces in and around Baghdad.
Oh, it was horrid.
It was horrible. It was just horrible. And to this day, we have no idea what the death toll was and the civilian death toll.
Right.
We just flat out.
There's some horrific pictures of video and stuff that journalists took. The only other thing, I didn't mention this before, but while I was holding, I thought about it. This new document, which I hadn't heard about until on the Randy Rhodes show a few hours ago, it's called Clean Break. It was authored by Benjamin Netanyahu in 1996, and many of the people in the administration were signatories, and it predates the Project for a New American Century Declaration or whatever, and it outlines a lot of what's going on now, and with the objective being to finally, through after Lebanon, get to Syria and Iran, and the idea being just to create general chaos and have set everybody against everybody else, and somehow that's to the advantage of these, you know, the superpowers.
Yeah.
So
it's not surprising. Benjamin Netanyahu was a little too far right for me, and actually the guys that are in there now, Olmert is... actually to the right of Benjamin Netanyahu. So, thanks very much for the call, Joan. I appreciate it. We're going to be calling. We're going to be figuring out more of this. We're going to be going more and more into this this issue. We're also going to.
AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Left Channel. Streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News, I'm Cammie McCormick. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice remains in the Middle East tonight after stops today in Lebanon and Israel. She'll continue her talks tomorrow with Israeli officials.
I'm Dan Raviv in Tel Aviv. There's no indication in public of a deadline whether Secretary Rice is telling Israel it has, say, 4 more days or 7 more days to keep pounding Hezbollah. When Rice was in Beirut before flying to Jerusalem, she seemed to disappoint the Lebanese politicians by refusing to embrace the idea of an immediate ceasefire. She said, first, there has to be an overall agreement to get Hezbollah away from the Israeli border.
Another scorcher in California has the governor urging conservation.
It is extremely important to set your thermostats at 78 degrees. It is also extremely important not to use any appliances until later on at night.
It's the eighth day of the heat wave. Utilities are dipping into their reserve supplies. Some news for those who may be hitting the beach to cool off. The FDA is approving a sunscreen ingredient that helps protect against ultraviolet radiation.
The active ingredient is something called Mexoril, and it's something we've been actually waiting for a long time. This ingredient was actually approved as a sunscreen ingredient in Europe.
Dr. Stephen Stone, the president of the American Academy of Dermatology, in fact, it's been in European sunscreen since 1993. Gas prices are up again, and the federal government says they're over $3 a gallon on average. More Americans are looking for ways to pay for a fill-up.
Cutting out, you know, going out to eat and, you know, maybe skip a movie, you know, and do a movie once every other month.
Gas prices are 71 cents a gallon higher than they were a year ago. Authorities in Indiana are looking for an internet sniper who has killed one person and wounded another. Case is very similar to the highway shootings in Ohio, and lessons were learned from that. A tip line was set up today, much like it was during the Ohio investigation.
It was tip number 5,444. That led to the identity and arrest of the person responsible for the I-270 shootings.
State Police First Sergeant Dave Burston says so far tips have indicated there may be more shootings. In Houston, the jury in the Andrea Yates retrial will resume deliberations tomorrow. She's accused of drowning her young children in a bathtub.
This is Steve Futterman at the County Courthouse in Houston. The jurors ended the day without reaching a verdict. They deliberated for around 2 hours and 45 minutes. At the end of the day, they were called called into the courtroom and told by the judge not to discuss the case until they return in the morning. Jurors are being sequestered during these deliberations in Yates' first trial that took jurors less than 4 hours to reach a verdict.
On Wall Street today, the Dow finished 182 points higher. The Nasdaq was up 41. This is CBS News.
Hi, I'm Bill Lester, driver of the number 23 Waste Management NASCAR Nextel Cup car, and this is my team. Actually, I'm backed by 30,000 Waste Management drivers, and we're looking for even more people who are ready to make a difference. So if you're geared up for a career that's going places, call Waste Management at 877-220-JOBS. Go ahead and call.
From everyday collection to environmental protection, think green, think Waste Management. Call 877-220-JOBS today.
Where do you want to be?
I'd like a real estate website where I can look at all the listings, not just those of a single company.
I'll know the right house when I see it, but it's frustrating having to go from website to website. I'm wearing out my mouse.
Find your perfect place. It's easy at REMAX.com. Now REMAX.com has more home listings to choose from than ever. REMAX listings and our competitors' listings, too. Nobody sells more real estate than REMAX. Each office independently owned and operated.
There have been a lot of alligator attacks in recent months. This story has a happy ending thanks to a television show.
He says he got bored waiting for friends' feet in the St. John's River Saturday night, so he started skipping stones. Then heard a crack, felt sharp pain. That's when 16-year-old Corey Workman realized an alligator had his left ankle in his jaws. Corey tried to fight it off. Suddenly, he remembered something he'd seen on TV.
You gotta put your thumb in its eye. It's the most sensitive part on an alligator, so... like, it just clicked in my head.
That did the trick. Now Corey's recovering from the bite. Trappers are looking for the gator. The teen says if they catch it, he wants it. He says the gator tried to eat him. He hopes to return the favor. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
Military aircraft are being sent to check on a cargo ship off the Aleutian Islands that's listing so badly, it's practically on its side. More than 20 crew members are on board, at least one injured. They may be evacuated. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
When you're tired of talking down the
odds of you being killed by a terrorist are practically zero. So I say relax and enjoy the show. You have to be a realist. You have to be realistic about terrorism. Certain groups of people, certain groups, Muslim fundamentalists, Christian fundamentalists, Jewish fundamentalists, and just plain guys from Montana, are going to continue to make life in this country very interesting for a long, long time. That's the reality. Angry men in combat fatigues talking to God on a two-way radio and muttering incoherent slogans about freedom are eventually going to provide us with a great deal of entertainment, especially after your stupid economy collapses all around you and the terrorists come out of the woodwork. You'll have anthrax in the water supply, the sarin gas in your air conditioners. There'll be chemical and biological suitcase bombs in every city. And I say, enjoy it. Relax. Enjoy the show. Take a chance. Put a little fun in your life.
Here. Well.
Upcoming, one of the fastest hours in all of radio anywhere in the world. John Elliott, guest hosting on the Majority Report on the Air America Radio Network. Happy Monday. How are you, wherever you are? Thank you for spending part of your time with us. 866-303-2270. If you haven't been with us for the first 2 hours, why the hell not? What were you doing? No, that wasn't a good enough excuse. Come with something better than that. A Clean Break, which was the paper that caller Joan from Santa Fe, New Mexico, was referring to when we went into the break, was actually not written by Benjamin Netanyahu. It was chaired by Richard Perle. That pearl of peace. At the time he was with the American Enterprise Institute, he was the study group leader and had such wonderful human beings as Douglas Feith, who was the who headed up the secret division of the they didn't like the information coming to the CIA, so Cheney had Feith have a secret little information gathering pieces of information that he could then use to wage war on Iraq, all that the stuff, the information that was ginned up that the intelligence communities could not find, of course, Feith found. So what this is a new strategy for securing the realm in Israel. Well, part of it is securing the northern border. This was written just before 2000, so this is 6 years old. Syria challenges Israel on Lebanese soil, an effective approach and one with Americans can sympathize would be if Israel seized the strategic initiative along its northern borders by engaging Hezbollah, Syria, and Iran as the principal agents of aggression in Lebanon by one. Striking Syria's drug money and counterfeiting infrastructure in Lebanon, all of which focuses on Razi Kahan. Two, paralleling Syria's behavior by establishing the precedent that Syrian territory is not immune to attacks emanating from Lebanon by Israeli proxy forces. And three, striking Syria military targets in Lebanon that should prove insufficient, striking its select targets in Syria proper. Israel can also take this opportunity to remind the world of the nature of the Syrian regime. Syria repeatedly breaks its words, violated numerous agreements with the Turks, has betrayed the United States by continuing to occupy Lebanon in violation, and so blah, 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 blah. Interestingly enough, Syria was basically thrown out of and forced to withdraw from Lebanon over the last 2 years, so they have been out of there. So it's not really much a serious Syrian problem, although Hezbollah certainly is affiliated with Syria. But that it refers to the Benjamin Netanyahu government that was coming into power at that point in time and was not a document written by Benjamin Netanyahu, as listener Joan had indicated that she thought it was. In the meantime, things are not getting better in the Middle East, are they? I mean, what is it with this Bush crowd? Look at all the Americans stranded in Lebanon while this nonsense goes on. I mean, Richard Wolff was talking to us, chief White House correspondent for Newsweek, was talking to us about the willingness of Bush to allow Hezbollah to be destroyed while at the same time looking at the casualties almost as, you know, as collateral damage. That's really too bad. You know, the civilian casualties. That's really too bad. Meanwhile, we've got 25,000 Americans that were stranded in Lebanon. We're told that 10,000 have gotten out. How about the other 15,000? I have questions for Republicans who are listening. Is Ray Nagin the mayor of Beirut? I have a second question. Who should we blame this time? What is wrong with this Bush administration? They knew about it. They knew it was going to happen. They know what's going on, and they still did nothing. The Italians, who used to be a part of the coalition of the coerced, remember? They got their citizens out. The French, who told us there were no WMD and who were smart enough not to join the coalition, they got their citizens out to safety. The Germans, who wanted no part of this debacle in Iraq, they got their citizens out. So the countries that Rumsfeld called old Europe, Italy, France, Germany, they got their people out, and Bush can't get our people out. Well, Rummy, there are known knowns and there are unknown knowns. Here's the known known. The known known is that old Europe rescued their citizens. The unknown known is why the hell Bush's Red administration couldn't rescue ours. What are they thinking? Oh, and by the way, I'd like to extend a personal statement of gratitude to Condi Rice for waiving the fee. You heard about that, didn't you? They're going to charge a fee to get people to rescue them out of Lebanon. They're being bombed. They're on the beaches. They're being attacked. You've got students at American University in Beirut. And the State Department was going to charge them a fee for rescuing them. And also, thanks to Condi, also for her, quote-unquote, concern about the human suffering that she expressed in Beirut today. Albert, Bedford, New York. You're on the Majority Report with John Elliott. How are you?
All right. How are you? I just wanted to bring up make a comment that people seem to dance around a great deal, and that is the fact that in terms of these religious issues, the fundamental problem, and no pun intended, is monotheism in and of itself. Because, for example,
the belief in one God.
Yeah, because if you look at the Greco-Roman world prior to the imposition of Christianity, no one was killing themselves over religious issues. It never happened because it was a polytheistic, synchronistic religion that afforded, there was no issue over homosexuality. There was no issue with women's rights. I mean, you can go through a list. The point is that because inherent within monotheism, okay, and this is explicit and implicit, is the fact that if you're crazy enough to buy into it, that means, by buying into it means that you're right and everyone else is wrong by implication. So that means it gives you the right to go out and kill and murder and do whatever you want in the name of your God.
Is this a reference to my statement earlier where we had what was his name? It wasn't James. It wasn't Garner. But he was the
He was one of the top generals that Bush had, that Rumsfeld had, and he said to the Iraqis, "My God is better than your God, and my God is bigger than your God."
Right.
Is this that type of rhetoric? Is that what you're referring to? Because he actually believed this.
Right. You see, I'm being a little ineloquent here, but if I can make there are two new books within the past few years that really did deal. Go into depth with this, and one of them is by a man named Jonathan Kirsch called God Versus the Gods, and the other is by Sam Harris, who has been on Air America, who wrote a book called The End of Faith. And you see that the problem is that when you buy into these monotheistic belief systems, it creates issues like, for example, Sam Harris talks about slavery. If you fervently believe in the Hebrew sky god Yahweh, okay, and believe the verbatim Old Testament, that means that you have to believe in human chattel slavery, because Yahweh fervently believes and supports and endorses human chattel slavery. And that's not implicit, that's explicit, that's said explicitly. Mm-hmm. So you see, the problem is people try to moderate these things and say, well, that's in the Old Testament, or they dance around. No, if you either believe it, this is also another issue where Harris deals with, is that the fundamentalists in essence have it correct. You either buy into it wholly, because you either believe it or you don't. You can't dance around these issues. That's what everybody tries to do.
Well, in the meantime, you got Tom DeLay when he was in his power, and he went to the Knesset in Israel, stood up there, and he said, you know, we really love you people, and we Republicans in the United States government are going to do everything we can to secure the future of Israel. And then he privately told people the reason he was doing that is simply because he wants to make sure there's 100,000 Jews that can be converted over to Christianity, take Jesus as their God and Savior, and then when the rapture comes, that's fine, and the rest of them, you know, who cares? So you get that type of nonsense, and the Knesset sitting there saying, why is he saying this to us? Does he think we're stupid?
Well, you see, that's the other thing implicit within these monotheistic faiths is to believe in this nonsense with the end of the world, Armageddon. I mean, that isn't in polytheistic religions. You don't have that. Once again, it's inherent within this monotheistic nonsense and this idea of Satan and all this. This all comes out of this. It all grows out of monotheism. It's really a bane on civilization, quite frankly.
Yeah,
and the point is, I think people need, you know, as H.G. Wells said, who was really one of the best social critics in the 20th century, said, civilization is now a race betwixt education and catastrophe, and that's what we're facing now, because we need a new paradigm of reason and to reject this monotheistic nonsense and accept reason as the basis, because ultimately, if there's going to be a salvation in this world, it's going to be through reason and considered opinion, and not through belief in some ancient Hebrew sky god.
Yeah, and you know, if you look back in time, all of this nonsense, it all is part of the Crusades, whether it's the old Crusades, but I mean, this is a crusade now. It's a crusade between those on the Christian Reich that want to eradicate Muslims and those Islamic extremists from the Muslim side that want to go after the Christian world. So it's a mess. We're working towards it. Well, I'll personally take it as a challenge to fix it. Albert, thanks a million for your call. I really appreciate it. Albert in Bedford, New York. John Elliott on the Majority Report on the Air America Radio Network. We're going to take a break, then we're going to come back. We'll take your calls, 866-303-2270.
You're listening to Sam Cedar and Janine Garofalo on the Majority Report, the world's most majoritized radio.
A liberal dose of the truth.
Listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
You know something? There's nothing wrong with a culture where everyone has a different idea of what's humorous. The last time I can remember an entire nation being on the same page, it was Germany in the late 30s, and it didn't really turn out that funny. Remember, in its time and place, what Hitler said was considered politically correct. And it's that blind adherence to what is situationally palatable that is truly dangerous. We should question it all, poke fun at it all, rail against it all, and most importantly, for Christ's sake, laugh at it all. Because the only thing separating Holy Writ from complete visual is your perspective. It's your only weapon. Keep the safety off. Don't take yourself too seriously. Remember that at the end of the day, this is just an ant farm with beepers, and it takes zero politically correct to screw in a light bulb because they are perpetually in the dark. Of course, that's just my opinion. I could be wrong.
People that have to be really, really happy about all this news about a war is the Catholic Church. Oh, yeah, they got to be happy because they're off the front page of the paper for the first time in a long time. Woo! Woo! And I am a recovering Catholic. Some of you are here tonight, yes? So I've been following this story. I went to 16 years of Catholic education. I'm lucky I'm alive. I went to Our Lady of Psychological Warfare. I've always felt that if women have to be in the military, they should only be lesbians. Because we would never get around to having a war. Right? Because we'd have to have some meetings. A war in October? What about the softball banquet?
The most dangerous liberal in America, John Elliott.
Majority Report, nationwide on the Air America Radio Network and around the world on the Internet. If you'd like to join us on a chat, go on to johntalk.com, J-O-N-T-A-L-K. Click on chat. Nathan is there, along with, I imagine, other people that are chatting away. By the way, you know, have you noticed about Iraq has been pushed off the front pages because of this Hezbollah, Lebanese, Israeli dust-up. 22 deaths of American servicemen and women since the Israeli-Hezbollah conflict began 13 days ago, and I'm missing the last 2 days' body count. 2,565. Let me say that again. 2,565. 2,565 American men and women, servicemen and women, dead. During this Friday show, I will do what I always do on the last show of every month, and that is I will pay tribute to America's fallen in this war. I will read the names of the American servicemen and women who died in Iraq this month. Somebody's got to honor them, for God's sake. If the president won't, I will. Speaking about Iraq, Bush has a new strategy. By my count, a shift in strategy number 14. Let's change again. Nothing else is worth. Tell me again about the shock and awe. We'll be greeted as liberators. We know where the WMD are. They're north, south, and east of the crit. Mission accomplished. Bring them on. Humvees with cardboard sides. Let's disband that Iraqi army. Yeah, a million men out of work. No job, no money. They view us as occupiers, and they know where all the weapons are hidden. How about Ahmed Chalabi? There's a great idea. Hey, come here. Sit next to Laura at the State of the Union address. Yeah, how about a new prime minister? Okay, that didn't work. How about yet another new leader? No, that didn't work. Now we got the third guy. There's more. Another new leader. Hey, what about Plastic Turkey Day in Baghdad Airport? Wow, what fun. A trip to the green zone so Bush could look him in the eyes. You want somebody to look at, President Bush? Look at this. Know what this is? No, I'm not surprised that you don't. It's a flag-draped coffin of an American who died in Iraq. Wait, there's more. I have more.
There are 2,500 more of them. Now yet another new policy. Billions and billions of dollars missing. American contractors grabbing the money and leaving without building the health clinics. Abu Ghraib, Haditha, 14-year-old girls raped and killed. Now we need to give them cultural training. An attack on Al Jazeera. Shutting down Iraqi's free press because it criticized America. What the hell are they talking about? What's to criticize? 3 to 5 hour gas lines, less oil now than when Saddam ran the joint. Hey, what about the electricity? It's 135 degrees and our troops got body armor? And now, Bush has another strategy. Well, why is he doing that when everything's going so well?
Roll out the barrel. We'll have the barrel of fun.
You know, I was saying about, you've all heard about the 14-year-old girl who was raped and then killed, and then her family was killed, and then she was set, her body was set on fire. Well, how do you react to this? The attorneys for the Army soldiers that are accused of raping this 14-year-old and killing her and her family are planning to argue that the men were under extreme emotional distress because of the horrors of their combat assignment, and they're going to challenge the alleged confessions of some of the soldiers that gave those to the investigators. I've got a lawyer by the name of David Sheldon. He's a civilian lawyer, and he's representing one of the people that's charged. And he says, quote, "While the government wants to say this was somehow a planned event, it's clearly the result of a tremendously stressful environment where soldiers are subjected to the most horrendous acts of violence by the insurgency. They were extremely young soldiers who suffered repeated traumatic attacks and saw unimaginable carnage. This was not a crime of opportunity, but the result of extreme pressure. The boys were under such pressure that you don't get it. They went over there, they raped her, they killed her, they burned her. Don't you understand? They were under pressure, for God's sake. And you think getting a financial statement out by the end of the month is pressure? Try and stand there. You know what pressure these poor people with? Come on, they're entitled to rape and burn and kill. God almighty, they're just relieving a little stress. It's the government's fault for not recognizing that. It's the damn army. Don't you get it? Unbelievable. Fred, Wilmington, North Carolina. How are you? Oh. I get a little amped up on stuff like that, man.
I understand. John?
Yeah, Fred, how are you?
I'm doing fine, here. Now, I decided to call. I've never called in before, so I just basically want to put my two cents in.
Well, welcome. I'm really. You've never called this program before?
I've called one time, but it was when it was a Jerry Springer show, and Sam was on it. So I haven't called this.
Well, I'm really glad you did. Glad you did. Thank you very much for calling.
Well, what I wanted to say is one thing I've noticed about all of this. You know, I spent 8 years in the Corps and then got out and went in the Army for 7, and then I was in the Persian Gulf in 91, got a little bit banged up. They medically retired me out, so I got a little bit of ground knowledge of what the military can do, what military armaments can do. And I was kind of thinking, you know, if Hamas was really meaning to strike a real devastating blow, something to really enrage people, they could have sat out there with a 10 or 15 81-millimeter mortars and just lobbed them in onto the Wailing Wall and all these other shrines and targets in Lebanon, I mean in Israel,
yeah.
And they could have done it with right within Palestine, and, you know, that definitely would have angered a whole bunch of people. And the other issue is I've noticed that the Lebanese have been pretty careful about their targeting of not targeting the rich, well-to-do neighborhoods within Lebanon. And
yeah.
And I was saying to the girl I talked to on the phone, I said, this just may be my own conspiratorial thoughts. It's like, I think the nefarious powers to be are pulling the strings behind on this.
I think you're right. The more we look at it, the more they realize that they're just going to let Israel go and pound out Hezbollah. They're also going to try and take out Hamas. Hamas really has been sitting on the sidelines in this particular thing. Fred, thanks a million for the call. Listening to us down in Wilmington, North Carolina. I do appreciate it. It's the Majority Report. John Elliott sitting in. 866-303-2270. We're going to come back. And when we come back, we have a treat for you. We have Jeffrey Nunberg. He's the author of Talking Right, How Conservatives Turned Liberalism into a Tax-Raising, Latte-Drinking, Sushi-Eating, Volvo-Driving, New York Times-Reading, Body-Piercing, Hollywood-Loving, Left-Wing Freak Show. We'll be right back.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio. You're listening to AM 1320.
It's the best bike vacation ever.
3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities.
It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreathe.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
Oh my God, this heat. I was sweating like Naomi Campbell trying to hire a maid. It was so hot today. It was so hot in Hollywood today. Brandon and Angelina adopted Ben and Jerry. Did you know that? It was so hot in Encino. Michael Jackson actually stopped at a young boy's lemonade stand and just bought the lemonade. You know the worst part about this heat wave across the country is Al Gore walking around going, I told you so. I told you so. Actually, if Al Gore's movie on global warming is correct, as you know, the ice caps are shrinking. You all know about that. The glaciers are shrinking. The only thing not shrinking, Al Gore, apparently. Have you seen Al? Really not shrinking. I tell you, the heat, it puts people in a bad mood. You know, in fact, coming into work today, people were swearing like President Bush near an open mic. It was unbelievable.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cache Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cache Fever Jackpot hits, a Cache Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cache Fever Jackpot total and your Cache Club points online now at CacheCreek.com. So join Cache Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
This is another AM 1320 Left Channel Action Calendar. Want to get involved in the political process and have a little bit of fun at the same time? The Town and Country Democratic Club is organizing the 2006 California State Fair Democratic Booth on behalf of the Sacramento County Democratic Central Committee, and they're looking for volunteers. Those who have volunteered at the booth at the fair over the years have found it to be a fun and rewarding experience. This election year is sure to offer additional excitement, so you'll be promoting Democratic values, registering voters, and providing a platform for many Democratic candidates running in the November election. The State Fair runs from August 11th through September 4th. If you'd like to get involved and help staff the Democratic booth at the California State Fair, go to the Sacramento County Democratic Party website at sacdem.org and click on Events.
Some time off, sitting in for Sam Cedar, John Elliott, the most dangerous liberal in America.
Welcome back to the Majority Report. Thanks for spending part of your Monday evening with us. Full adjunct professor at UC's Berkeley School of Information. He's a linguist. He's also a consulting professor at Stanford University, a noted author. He has a new book out called Talking Right, How Conservatives Turned Liberalism into a tax-raising, latte-drinking, sushi-eating, Volvo-driving, New York Times-reading, body-piercing, Hollywood-loving, left-wing freak show, Professor Jeffrey Nunberg. Jeff, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm very well. You do that subtitle like you've been practicing it.
I tried it. Yeah, I tried it once. And they did an ad on this, didn't they, in Iowa?
The Club for Growth, which is that ultra-right organization that tries to hold straying conservatives' feet to the fire, ran this ad when Dean looked like he was going to win the Iowa caucuses, and a couple are coming out of a barber shop or something, and the announcer says, "What do you think of Dean's plan to raise taxes by $2,000 on every family?" And the man says, "I think Dean can take his tax hiking latte drinking, sushi eating, Volvo driving, New York Times reading, his wife picks it up, body piercing, Hollywood loving, left wing freak show back to Vermont where it belongs. And it was a great, great ad that just summed up everything that the
terrific ad.
The right has been able to pin on liberals over the last 25 years.
Now, as you probably heard at the opening, I am actually the most dangerous liberal in America, and I actually like being called a liberal.
Right. Well, good for you. I wish there were more liberals like you and me who weren't ashamed of that label.
Well, you know, we like to say things that make the right wing froth.
Right.
You know. And,
right.
And tell me, I've got this book. It's a fascinating book, and I know the L word has been trashed, and you've got a chapter in here called "Trashing the L Word," and they have done such a marvelous phrase where when they say the word liberal, they draw the word out from a linguistic point of view, and it's said with a sneer and with a nose in the sort of holding one's nose. It's like, he's a liberal. And it's you never say that about a conservative. He's a conservative. It's like, God, look at the disease. He's got AIDS.
Right.
You know?
Right.
They've managed to, and you are a linguist, tell me what they have done to take this word that is a very nice word, and it's an easier word to say. Liberal is an easier word to say than conservative. Tell me what they've done to trash it.
Well, basically, they've turned it. There was a time when liberalism and conservatism were the names of two political philosophies, and people debated about what role government should take in the economy and in daily life, and it was a respectable political philosophical discussion. The right in the last 25 years or so, and I should say with some help from the left, particularly during the 60s and 70s, has turned that word into a lifestyle term. If you look in the press, you'll never see the phrase working class liberal. It just doesn't exist. And I'm not talking about the right-wing press. I'm talking about the so-called liberal media, as
right.
Eric Alterman says, the Times, the New York Times, the LA Times. You never see the phrase working class liberal because you can be for keeping Social Security in its present form, against the Iraq War, pro-choice, down the litany of standard liberal positions, but if you can't afford the countertops, you don't count as a liberal. So it's become a kind of lifestyle word that just refers to what you drive and what kind of coffee drink you eat, and that's divorced from any real philosophical idea of liberalism.
Can we get it back? Because we did a focus group, a two-part question. Can we get it back? And the second part is we did a focus group here specifically on me and my radio show. And the coordinator of the focus group said, are you liberals or are you progressives? Oh, they all wanted to be progressives. They didn't want to be liberals anymore.
Right. And progressive is a fine old word. I don't have anything against the word progressive. I think the problem is that liberals run to progressive as if they could escape the stigma that it's attached to the L word just by changing the name. In the book, I compare it to what Ford did when they tried to slip out of when they got in all that trouble with the Edsel in 1960, and they just kept making the same cars but called them a Galaxy and put a different grill on it, right? And I think liberals assume that they can somehow do that, but what it does is basically it leaves the word liberal, which is still the important word in the American vocabulary, and it leaves it to the right to define. So the liberals have bailed out on the word, and it's just the right's word to define. Once the other side is defining your name, you're in trouble.
Well, absolutely. We tend to lose that's part of where Lakoff comes from too, is that they get out in front on the buzz phrase, and I look at it and I say, you know, liberal, liberty. It's drawn from the word liberate, liberty. What we're supposed to be doing in Iraq, we're supposed to be bringing liberty, and liberty's good. You know, this liberty is the American way. And then I look at conservative and I say, well, take conservative, you know, cantankerous and conflicted and constipated and condom. What's pleasant about that? And yet they're able to win this war.
I think also that, you know, labor had a campaign. They had a bumper sticker. I liked it so much. I got a copy from a friend of mine at the AFL-CIO. Labor, the folks who brought you the weekend. Do you remember that terrific slogan they had? Well, I wish liberals would make a similar claim and remind people where Social Security came from and where all these programs that they still support, even as they're sneering at the L word, where those programs came from.
Yeah, your life is better if you're a liberal. I mean, we guaranteed that type of society for the middle class and the underclass, you know,
right.
we're the party that cares about people, and the other side really seems to care about money and power, or power and money, depending upon what their mood is.
Right, I think that's right, and I think basically people have come to take for granted the things that liberalism created. Not that they would ever want to do away with. I mean, when the administration tried to privatize Social Security, it just didn't fly because people believe in those programs. And I think liberals just have to remind voters where those programs came from. That's what liberalism means.
Well, and tax and spend liberal was a single word. You know?
Right.
It's not even a phrase.
Right.
Tax and spend liberal is one word.
Right. And what liberals do, it isn't just about the L word, where they assume they can somehow get out of this whole negative stereotype simply by not using that word. But again and again, they use the rights language in the hope of neutralizing the rights advantages. So you look at the way liberals and Democrats have taken to using big government themselves. When Clinton said in his 1997 State of the Union message, the era of big government is over, everybody thought he'd neutralize the term. In fact, the next day, the Conservative Weekly Standard ran a headline that said, "We win." Right? And they did. The second liberals gave in on big government, the possibility of using government to do anything effective, in particular protect people from powerful and wealthy interests, disappeared.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. I think you hit that one on the head. And there's a couple of things in here that bothered me. I mean, first of all, I have to tell you that I thoroughly agree with the Democrats' phrase, "Together we can do better." I thought, this is it?
Yeah.
This is as good as it gets? Together we can do better?
Right. Whatever we are, we're not as bad as those bozos. Right.
Yeah.
And
if we all hang together, we can do better. So we're not going to lead.
Right.
We're just going to sit in a circle and hold hands.
Right.
You've got a chapter in here talking about the notable advantage of the rights populism is that it has low carrying costs, which is a marvelously wonderful sentence to open a paragraph with and open a chapter. And then you say it isn't very expensive to implement values policies like restricting abortion and stem cell research, moving funds to abstinence-only programs, appointing right-wing judges, or introducing constitutional amendments to flag burning and gay marriage. And that's easy. And you point out how easy it is for them to... They don't have to do much on that. They just float those out there, and they seem to take on a life of their own. Whereas for Democrats, as you point out, through a populist appeal, it's harder to hoe. It isn't easy for us to instill voters with the indignation over the efforts of and effects of the Republicans, the wages, the price of gasoline, the price of health care and college and whatnot. And we have, you put in here, voters have to believe the government's in a position to do something about it. And the first and foremost question of coming up with a workable and compelling program that can address the social and economic inequities in America, but it's also a matter of persuading people that government still can be an effective agent of change.
Yeah,
so that's really a fundamental obstacle that we have as liberals.
I think this is a part of the story. Beginning really with Carter, this goes back a ways. Democrats decided, well, we can get around these big government charges by pretending we're for small government too. And once the argument is joined at that level of big versus small, I mean, big government's not a technical term. It's no more than big hair is, right? It's just a phrase that the right has used to tar all government programs. And I wish that Kerry, for instance, when Bush taxed him during the second debate, I think, he said that his medical plan was another Democrat liberal big government program. If Kerry come back and say, well, which part of government are you opposed to? Do you want to do away with? Is it Social Security? Is it the FDA? And gone down the list of government programs that people believe in. Because the fact is that when you talk about government in the abstract, people are against it. When you start enumerating particular programs, people are for them. And I think that the battle has to be fought not at the level of government, but at the level of individual programs. And there the Democrats have a lot of support.
Yeah, they do, and they have to be able to articulate that. We're talking with Professor Jeff Nunberg, author and a linguist at Berkeley and Stanford. You make a statement in here which bothered the hell out of me. Americans have always been ambivalent about government. I hate when the truth is something I don't agree with. It makes me uncomfortable.
I'm not trying to be, right.
I just hate hearing that, you know, and I think, God, I don't like that. I guess we really are coast to coast. We're more worried about the price of gas and whether little Johnny will get a goal on soccer or whether he's going to be benched and whether we're going to get a raise at work. And without recognizing how much big government and government at all plays into this particular equation.
I think that's right. I think Americans, I mean, I think it's by and large a good thing that Americans have a certain chariness about government, a certain skittishness about government, because it's also kept people, it's kept the government from doing a lot of things it shouldn't have done, and that European governments, say, have done. But I think it's right that people are opposed, particularly to government in the abstract, even as they support or take for granted the particular things that government does. I have a line in there. I say, people's enthusiasm for small government is apt to wane on the first heavy snow day. And I think that's how it works. When Newt Gingrich came in 1994 and had been talking about eliminating government and so on with great support, and actually started to dismantle government programs and shut down the government for quite a while, people were pretty alarmed. As I say, it's as if somebody who's been making a career out of telling lawyer jokes actually starts to burn down the county courthouse. And so I think when if you can keep the argument at the level of particular programs, then you can win these arguments.
But in a case where the overriding factor, I mean, you go back to James Carville's statement, it's the economy, stupid. And I've talked to John Zogby, and he says all you have to say is it's the war, stupid. It's Iraq, stupid. And that seems to be the overriding consideration going into the next election. And if we get caught up on our side talking about flag burning, and I mean, when the hell was the last time a flag was burned? Was it 1960 something?
I don't know.
Please, this is not a this is not a crisis. They manufacture a crisis, claim it's an urgent crisis, and then have a solution for it, which is a non-existent solution to a non-existing problem. And we need to be able to grab hold of these things. I remember when Kerry was the front runner. This is even before Howard Dean got traction, and it was at our time in the war where the French were not really our friends. Not that they've been recently, but even less friends when we start changing words like friendly fries and stuff and that nonsense.
Right.
And somebody decided to carry, and they said three words. He looks French. And right away, our side was doing the Aztec two-step up and around. Well, he's not really French. He's actually Irish. Well, actually, there's some Jewish blood in him, but he was born. And we start into this whole convoluted explanation. Why do they always win the upper hand on the ability to make a statement that is so easy? Flip-flop. I mean, the reality is, if you want it, and this is where I think Karl Rove has the genius, is he goes after a person's strength. How he could take a decorated war veteran and trash him over a guy that dodged the draft is masterful. But,
right. I think that's absolutely true. And I think, in fact, in a funny way, the French business hurt Kerry worse even than the Swift boat or the reports on what he'd done when he came back from Vietnam. If you looked at Fox News coverage of the buildup to the Iraq war, 75% of the stories about Iraq also mentioned the French. For Fox News, this was a story about, only incidentally, a story about Saddam Hussein. It was really a story about the French, and not really about the French either, but about all those East Coast liberals who speak French and go over there, like John Kerry and so on.
Yeah.
And in that sense, I think Kerry's French connection was more damaging to him than anything he did on the voting for or against the war or anything else. So, yeah. I think the right has been very successful in playing these cultural cards.
What you're saying, Jeff, is if Kerry was actually, if his wife was born in Rome as opposed to in France, and he had a leaning and had gone to school in Italy, then Italy would have been, he looks Italian, and we would have been trashing the Italians.
Probably, although, inasmuch as Berlusconi has had troops in Iraq, that was probably the only thing that would have stopped that from happening.
Yeah, perhaps.
But, France and Italy, I mean, it's no accident that the products, for instance, that these people pick on are latte and cappuccino and brie.
Of course not.
They never pick on Port and Stilton nowadays, right?
They don't.
Those are good conservative products. Those are all right to
eat. And we're the party of big Hollywood, but no one ever seems to say they're the party of big tobacco.
Right, exactly.
We all know how many people Hollywood killed.
About fighting back and being as tough and confrontational as the right has been.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do. The book is Talking Right, How Conservatives Turned Liberalism into a Tax-Raising, Latte-Drinking, Sushi-Eating, Volvo-Driving, New York Times-Reading, Body-Piercing, Hollywood-Loving, Left-Wing Freak Show by Professor Jeffrey Numberg. Jeff, thanks very much for visiting with us on the program. I appreciate it tonight.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Thanks. My pleasure. Jeffrey Numberg, professor of linguistic, professor at Berkeley, and also at Stanford in the Bay Area around San Francisco. 866-303-2270. I'm going to take a break, and then Real Dre, why don't you pick up the phone and call me? You complain that you never can get on a show? Now's your time, man. Call us right now. 866-303-2270. We'll put you on the air. It's John Elliott on The Majority Report. I'll be right back.
The Majority Report with Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar. The left has never been so right or so sexy.
A liberal dose of the truth.
every American and every person of every faith and every nation, and to bring them to justice. All missions are being executed according to plan, without warning or provocation. Americans are being swept up in an international dragnet. Thousands of FBI agents are on the trail of other citizens here and abroad. It has everything to do with hate and evil and murder and prejudice. America's strong, strong, strong.
Federal agents, we are armed!
And around the world on the internet, the Air America Radio Network. This is the Majority Report. I'm John Elliott, sitting in for Sam. Derek, Key West, Florida. How are you? Welcome to the program.
Good.
Hello.
I was just wondering if, right before we went into Iraq,
right,
Fox News was broadcasting some stuff about France and Germany trading goods with Iraq for their oil. Was that just propaganda, or was that for real?
No, a lot of companies and a lot of countries did business with Iraq. I mean, let's look back. We're now after Iran, right? I mean, Iran is supplying Hezbollah. We hate Iran. Meanwhile, remember the Iran-Contra hearings? Well, that was the United States selling weaponry to Iran. I wonder where that's ended up. And, of course, they were not our friends at that point in time. And then, of course, where was this picture of Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam Hussein when he was president of G.W. Searle, a pharmaceutical company? And the next thing we know that... we have Iraq, and Saddam Hussein has chemical weapons. And then we decide that we like the Iraq better than Iran, so we sort of supply Iraq and Saddam Hussein, who is our friend, as opposed to the Shah of Iran. Remember the Shah of Iran? He was our friend, too. So, well, you know, the fact that there's commerce going on, I mean, one of the big problems, as Richard Wolff pointed out in his article in his cover story Newsweek, is the fact that there is a very strong relationship between Russia in trade, between Russia and Iran and Syria. And you're trying to get the Russians to try and get the Syrians and the Iranians to back off on Hezbollah. At the same time, we're trying to do some magic on our support of Israel. And, yes, all these countries have interests in the field. And you know what? If you look at the fact that Halliburton, we had a Trading with the Enemy Act. We were not allowed to trade do business with Iraq. And Halliburton set up a Halliburton subsidiary, wholly owned subsidiary, in the Cayman Islands, offshore in the United States. And that company did business with Iraq during the no-fly zone, during the 90s, when it was illegal to do so, and that company was chairman and CEO was Dick Cheney. So, yeah, there's a lot, you know, it's very convenient for us to blame the French or the Germans for doing business with Iraq or Iran at that point in time, when it was very two-faced because our companies were doing it too, Derek.
Yeah, they were just trying to come up with a reason why France and Germany wouldn't join in
Right, they were trying to recruit them, and if they wouldn't come around our way of thinking, then by God, let's trash them. Thanks very much for the call. Andre, how are you? You're calling in. You finally got through. Hi, how are you? Is this Andre? Is he on?
Yes, is he.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You write a little note on our chat room that you don't want to call because nobody ever takes your calls. And look at that. Bam, yeah. You call and I take your call.
I'm ecstatic. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Blacksburg, Virginia.
Yes.
How are you? What's on your mind? I got about 30 seconds.
I was just saying, running this entire war, I just don't see why he wasted so much manpower doing this. No one benefits from prolonged warfare. You use up all your resources. You lose public support. You waste money. It just makes no entire sense.